Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Oh, boy. It's October. Things happen in October. A lot of things happen in October. My birthday last week turned 64. Today is the anniversary of heart surgery. And so I talk about it on the show periodically. I try not to overdo it, although it's pretty dramatic stuff. I mean, you know, I've never had major surgery, and, you know, God willing, I hopefully won't have to do anything like that again. But it was pretty intense. Anyway, so there's a thing called a mitral valve, which with me wasn't working. It just wasn't fitting properly. It was too big, so they had to do a little trim. But because of that, you know, I had to actually, you know, when my heart was pumping, only about half my blood was going forward and the other half was going backwards. I didn't know. I didn't feel anything. I felt fine. And that's what the doctor said. Yeah, you will feel fine. Until, dramatic drum roll, please, until, hang on, wait a minute. I'm going to even try this out. Let's see if I can do a little dramatic. We'll only play the start of my my guest of the day thing. But we need a drum roll. Until. There we go. Until you fall off the cliff. And so what they told me was that I asked the doctor, you know, it was before surgery. I said, just give it to me straight. Tell me what the story is. He says, you got a 1 in 5 chance of dying in the next 5 years. That was 2 years ago. So I thought, 7 years ago, I thought, yeah, okay. I said, those aren't good odds, are they? He says, no, they're not. Oh, boy. And what it would have been was myocarditis, swelling of the heart, collapse of the heart, all kinds of other things. And so we caught it early. You know, just like I caught melanoma the same year. In fact, I had both. I had two fatal conditions at the same time. Life was not good. I didn't know it. I felt great, right? So I had melanoma, which they took out because that was caught early, and I had myocarditis, which was, I didn't have it, but I had a heart valve problem, which genetic. I had a heart murmur all my life, right? And so it just got worse, and they finally looked into it and went, "Oh, gee, this is not good." And so so the doctors, you know, like I say, oh, Pianchi's listening on the live chat now. Yeah. So I had, so I went for the surgery after 5 opinions, including the chief of cardiology at Stanford Medical School. And they said, yeah, you really need to have this what they call mitral valve repair surgery. And so I'm not big on, you know, as you know, I'm not really big on the health profession, you know, and I took a long, careful look at this, but I'm not stupid either. And so I evaluated the risks, the benefits, and the benefits far outweighed the risks. And so I thought, yeah, I got stuff to do. This is before I'd even created Action Radio. And I think because of this, I could create Action Radio knowing, you know, hey, the heart's fixed. Let's go. You know, 4 months later, I drove to Florida. So literally 4 months after open heart surgery, and I was not healthy. I was like 100 pounds overweight. Apparently you gain a ton of weight after a surgery like that. And you have all these other health problems. It takes a while. I'm still recovering. I'm pretty good shape now. I'm trying to lose the last of my weight. That was extended because of the stress of creating Action Radio, working a full-time job, and other things that I was doing. It was pretty miserable a couple of years ago. But here we are. And, of course, the censorship didn't help either from big tech. But here we are. This is the 7th anniversary, and life's looking pretty good right now. So we've got Citizen Legislation Day coming up. We have the world's first showcase of citizen legislation, of legislation written by just us regular folks out here. Not lawyers, not professionals, not highly paid lobbyists, none of that stuff, just us regular people, you know, and I've written a lot of them simply because, you know, I wanted to create the format. Pianchi's on live chat. He's written a bill. Actually, I think he's written a couple of bills. We've got other folks, Josie, who does our report, the Latino report in the second hour. She's written a bill on fingerprint voter ID. Pianchi has a couple of ones, one of them on splitting the ballots between state and federal. These are all great ideas. And we have other folks. We have a person that was listening to our World's Greatest Doctor series last year. Last summer, we had Dr. Jody Mikovits, Dr. Brian Artis, Dr. Ben Marble, Dr. Jim Thorpe, you know, a bunch of other really highly rated doctors. And we have special guests like Pierre Corey. I tried to get McCullough and Malone. They actually joined us later on this year. But back in 2022, we had some amazing people. We have 18 weeks of the world's greatest doctors, plus John Cullen, who created the COVID map for Johns Hopkins. So we had some amazing people. And these folks, you know, and the biggest backer of our probably most important bill right now, which is vaccine product liability, which would stop all this COVID nonsense immediately. And I wrote it over 2 years ago, right? And so she's going to be coming out to our Citizen Legislation Day, which is January 7th. So this is going to be fascinating. I'm going to get more folks. We're going to get some major media. We've got social media coverage already. So the whole thing's going to be on social media. So you'll be able to watch it, share it, and everything else. Oh, he says, Pianchi says, I know a lady who had a similar operation done in the doctor's office. Are we talking about the melanoma, or are we talking about, you know, trimming a mitral valve? You can't trim a mitral valve in a doctor's office. That's a little bit intense to do that. You know, it just, that's major surgery. There was a team of, I think, three doctors, five nurses, and who knows who else was there. But who else was at the party? I don't know. I was clinically dead for 4 hours. So I don't know. I was there, but I wasn't there. And when you're clinically dead, trust me, there's nothing. This is why I don't fear death now, because having been there and back, you know, and there's nothing. There's just nothing. You know, so my spirit obviously didn't leave, didn't go to heaven, didn't look down. I had no out-of-body experience. I didn't look down and go, oh, there I am being operated on. Yep, didn't see that. There was just nothing. And so when I came back, I woke up, you know, I went to sleep on the operating table and woke up with ventilator tubes down my throat. Good noise outside. That's how it happened. Anyway, so enough about me. But that was 7 years ago. And so my birthday on the 19th, surgery on the 24th. And then the best present of all, this is back in 2016, was I got home, and I think it was like 3 days later was the election. Now, I think I'd already voted absentee knowing I was going to have surgery. So that had already gone in. But watching Trump win was like the kickoff of my new life. And so I thought, things are improving. America's back. Trump won, you know, so, and it was 24th, the thing was November 3rd, so I was in the hospital, I think, about a week after surgery. It wasn't that long. I was actually more active than just about anybody that had. So the best thing you can do to recover from surgery is get up and walk around, even open heart surgery. Get up, walk around. I walked 10 feet the first day. That's a lot. Trust me, you know, because you're dragging these machines beside. You had this machine was like, flushing out my chest of all the blood and stuff and things like that. Big machine. It's like hauling around an air conditioner with you. Well, both of us survived. Hooray. Yeah, the Pianchi said. Yeah, I think so too. Thank you, Pianchi. You know, thank God. Thank, some really good doctors. And so, they did a nice job. And now I'm able to do things like I say, every once in a while I post a picture of a bike ride I do. I do about 18 miles now on my bike rides. And so we have this beautiful trail. It's called the Blackwater Trail. It's an old train route from Florida out to Alabama. And it's kind of uphill on the way there, which means it's kind of downhill on the way back. So it's really kind of cool. So a slight upgrade on the way there and a slight downgrade. So it's a little bit easier coming back. But I think it's about 18 miles right now is what I'm doing on a typical bike ride, plus a couple times in the gym. And this is all thanks to the doctors and, the fact that I really have always cared about my health. Now, here's the weird part. One little health note. Marco's on the line. Has got a show muted. That's okay, Marco. I'm just talking about myself. It's okay. Marco's in the Netherlands. But we'll catch up soon. Brianna's going to join us in just a little bit here. She should be calling in. Next few minutes. Anyway, I completely forgot what I was talking about. I was on a roll too. Heart surgery. Walking around with the vent thing. Oh yeah, bike riding. So it's bike riding, gym, things like that. I completely forgot. Anyway, so it's a beautiful trail out here. And the thing is that I'm able to do things now. Now I was still able to do all those same things, you know, before heart surgery, but the recovery time was longer because I only had half my blood flow. So now I got full oxygen instead of half oxygen. I've got full blood instead of half blood. So I'm exercising more. I'm stressing more. I'm trying to do even more things, than I did before. Marcus says, I wouldn't call a meeting a good day, but thanks. You have a good one too. I'm having a great one. Anyway, let's get to news. So this is my personal anniversary. I don't know if anybody else. There's a couple of birthdays, October 24th. Let's chat. All right. So you got me. No, you've got Brianna calling in with the government inquiry report as soon as she gets here. Then we got Josie with the Latino report. I think we sort of gotten away from the theme of that report a little bit. We've been delving a lot into to various things that issues that apparently Josie and I just disagree with. But that's okay. We'll figure them out as we go. Just looking up some stuff here. Yeah, let's see if I can find it. Where is it? Ah, there it is. That's what I'm looking for. Okay, fine. Don't mind me. I'm the producer too. I'm multitasking. Okay, so let's talk about the issues. Let me find my issues here. Opening comments. There we go. All right. So I made a comment on Facebook that we might want to react to at some point here. I said 25 GOP weenies voted against Jim Jordan in public, but 125 voted against him in private session. I said, there's your deep state, just like January 6th under the Capitol. So everything the deep state does, they do in secret. They voted for, they arranged the coup under the Capitol while the Trump supporters are upstairs. The Republican deep state has voted for, we got more comments here. Yeah, Bianchi wants Brianna to come on. Yeah, I want her to come on too. Well, we'll see. You know, she said she'd be a few minutes late. That's okay. You know, we accommodate all our reporters, and she's a fabulous reporter. She's great. Anyway, so we got January 6th reminds me very much of what happened over the weekend with the Republicans. So they operate in secret. That way you can't pressure them. They had the opposite pressure during January 6th. The Trump supporters were entrapped into walking into the Capitol so that the people under the Capitol, in other words, the Congress, the House and the Senate, they could say, look, there's an insurrection going on upstairs, you know, with cell phones, you know, and people walking in between the velvet ropes, you know, those horrible people, look what they're doing up. And of course you had the Antifa, Black Lives Matter, and the other FBI mercenaries breaking things and making it look like it actually was an insurrection, or at least a riot or something violent. I mean, that was the pretense. So then under the Capitol, they voted to forget the Trump electors that the state electors, state legislators had provided. They went instead with the Brandon electors because that's what they were told to do. And so they did, pretty much like what happened this weekend, where the Republicans were told, well, you're voting in secret. Nobody's going to know. No one's going to know if you vote against Jim Jordan. So 100 extra Republicans voted against Jim Jordan. Now, why would you vote against Jim Jordan? Well, Jim Jordan represents America first, represents patriotism, country, you know, God, family, mom, apple pie, all that good stuff. That's what Jim Jordan represents. He represents investigations. He represents fair play. He represents looking at things and doing something about it. He represents all the things that we want from somebody in Congress. So, of course, the Republican Party voted him down. Why would they want someone like that running the House? Why would they want somebody actually good? Why would they want somebody that's going to go back to appropriations bills? Why would they want to get rid of their continuing resolutions? Why would they want the Brandon corruption investigated, which might lead to their own corrupt investigations? Why would they want anything good to happen to this country? The simple fact is, and I'm going to write an article. I've been threatening to write this article for a while. This is what happens when the government chooses the government. This is what you get. What you get is a horror show. What you get is an aristocracy and a peasantry. That's us. We are the peasantry. Now, Pianki likes what I'm saying. Thank you. Good. I'm going to keep saying it. But this is what happens. Okay. Now, the way out of this, of course, is for the peasants to rise up and nonviolently, because there's no violence required in this. It's very simple. Rise up and simply, you know, mass email legislation that we write to Congress and to media. Okay. And it's not just us. I mean, there's a lot of other groups doing a lot of other good work, but we are the only place in the country right now where an average citizen can write a bill and we can get it worldwide. I mean, that's what we do. And that's the whole reason for Citizen Legislation Day, is to showcase this legislation to the world. I mean, I'll be looking at international media sources and some other things. For now, I need to raise some money. I mean, I do. I need to raise more money. So if you want to make $10, $20, $50, $100 donation even to Action Radio, if you look at the broadcast page, you know, it's very simple. It's all there right on our broadcast page. We have two sites for PayPal and Venmo. So just read the – I probably have it myself here. I can probably find it. Nope, I got a different sheet up here. Let me just this will only take a second to pop up another form. I'm actually organized. Hard to believe, right? So paypal.me/actionradio and venmo.com/actionradio. So once again, paypal.me/actionradio and venmo.com/actionradio. So I'm going to even put them in the show notes. That way we can send them to stream. But, you know, and we don't need to raise a lot of money. You know, $1,000. So that's where we are right now. $1,000 is all we need, because I believe in minimum cost. You know, if you look at our legislation, you can't find one of our bills that costs you money. None of our bills cost you money. I don't know if anybody's noticed that, but all the Action Radio bills, from vaccine product liability to big tech censorship to the constitutional amendment to stop Congress from borrowing money, you know, none of these things cost the taxpayers money. In fact, I want to talk to Brandon when she comes on, because it's her generation that's going to need this, about a bill converting Social Security to personal security. So I will see if she wants to write. She has enough to do. She's busy right now. But the Personal Security Act would take the 15% that the companies allocate to pay you. None of this 7%, 7% then. That's a bunch of crap. Okay. The company, of the money the company sets aside to pay you, 15% of it goes to the payroll tax. There she is. Good. So, in fact, Brianna, since you're there, I'm going to talk. Let me. It's good timing. Let me start this again. So, Brianna, my idea for you is to write, not that you don't have enough to do, but the Personal Security Act to replace the Social Security Act. Again, let me just outline it real quickly. What it does is it would convert the 15% that the company allocates to pay you and sends it to the government in the form of the payroll tax. Again, none of this 7% them, 7% you. No, the company takes 15% of the money that they would have paid you and sends it to the government and calls it the payroll tax. So instead of having 15% go to the government and rely on a, quote, Social Security, you know, payment that's minimum, the Personal Security Act would take 10% of your money, of your salary that the company would pay you, and they put it in a private account. And you can't touch it till 60. And I talked about this with Derek on Friday. The compounding effect of 10% of somebody's money their entire working life from 18 or 21 out of college. We'll talk about college too. I should talk about that as well. But the money that you would make in a personal security account with 10% of your money put in, even as just putting the S&P 500 in the stock market or a mutual fund or something like that, don't touch it till 60. Compounding all the way through your working life would so far exceed Social Security. It'd be mind-boggling, the difference. All right, let's bring on Brianna. She started as a guest on Action Radio, courtesy of our Constitution reporter, Amber Kemper. Both Brianna and Amber are graduates of Patriot Academy, a place where young folks get to practice writing and advocating legislation and being legislators in a mock session. Brianna immediately impressed all of us as someone we wanted on the show with her own report. With an insightful mind, asking and taking on complex questions, and a growing skill in sarcasm and satire, plus her study of government, history, the Constitution, and our founding, all of her skills and knowledge combine into something pretty incredible here on Action Radio. And now, the Government Inquiry Report with Brianna Cannon. So how's that for an idea? What do you think? If your entire working life, you could convert the 15% that goes to the government and this meager pittance Social Security payment comes out to you, if there even is one, compared to a 10% allocation of your salary to a private account, which you couldn't touch until age 60. But it would give you, this is obviously a rhetorical question, right? It would give you multiple times. The amount of money that whatever Social Security there is, and it would be your account. You could keep it, pass it on to your kids, grandkids, whatever. What would you choose?
Personal savings account.
Yeah. Well, I call it a personal security account. Instead of playing off the Social Security account, we could call it the individual security account. But the point is that Social Security is socialism. It's not designed for the individual. It's designed for social, which means the society, which means for the government. It's a second income tax. And of that second income tax, they give you a slight portion of it back compared to the amount that you pay in, the amount that the compounded amount that goes to government. It's just another tax. So your generation is going to face this, you know. But if you could start now, when you start working full time with 10% of your money, so you actually get a 5% pay raise instead of 15% being taken out, only 10% be taken out, and you'd get multiple times more money. I mean, to me, this is a no-brainer. What do you think?
Yeah, and changing it to IS or PS is a lot better than SS.
Well, exactly. Yeah, well, of course, my other question is, I know you're busy enough, but would you be interested in writing that? I mean, I could do it myself. I don't think it would take a long time, but I'm trying not to write all the bills now. I want to kind of share the wealth here. I'll get more names on more bills other than mine. But I think it would just be a matter of looking at the Social Security Act, getting rid of it, and replacing it with something very simple that says 10%. And this has to be mandatory, because if you don't do it, no one's going to save, and then we're still going to be stuck with huge costs for seniors. But 10%, you know, over your working life, and I would lower the retirement age to 60, because at 60, I think you're smart enough. At least I thought I was. That was 4 years ago. I just had my birthday. You missed it. You think you missed the chance to sing "When I'm 64" from the Beatles? I bet you don't even know that song. Do you know that song?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, happy birthday.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. But that's the thing, that if you could do it now and lock that in, that would be huge. Do you guys talk about, I mean, it's hard for young folks to talk about retirement, but once you start paying, once you start working full time, the tax bite hits you pretty hard. Back to you.
Yeah.
Are you thinking? Okay. I just, you know me, I want it. It's like if there's like vacant air, I go, wait a minute, what's wrong? Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I don't get taxed for Social Security yet, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
But any of the taxes that I do have, I think, go back since I'm a minor.
Right, exactly. But once you start working full time, and even in college students don't pay full taxes either because you're still in school, and I'm fine with that because you should be learning good things. Speaking of which, let's talk about that. I don't know if you saw this, and I haven't seen the report yet or the audio. I just read this. Bill Maher, who is a graduate of an Ivy League school, Dartmouth maybe, something like that, said that these schools are a waste of time. They're liberal indoctrination centers. It's like an educational gulag. Maybe that's my term. But anyway, what's the current feeling with folks as far as college goes? Because when I was in school, especially in upper crust hoity-toity Lexington, Massachusetts, everybody went to college except for those that were, which we euphemistically refer to as cannon fodder. And those people that couldn't do anything else, they joined the military. Not to disparage the military, but in Massachusetts, in liberal Massachusetts, nobody went to the military. That was unheard of. We're above that. We're liberals. We don't do that kind of thing, right? So there's no patriotism left in the place that basically started the war for independence in Lexington. So the place that started the war for independence doesn't value the military anymore. So the people that could do nothing else, they sent them into to be grunts. But that was the view of the military there. But it's really interesting. Anyway, I have no idea what I was talking about. Wait, how did I start this thing? I guess patriotism in general.
So for colleges. Uh-huh.
College, that's right. Thank you.
I'm going to take this from the enlightened point of view, so those that have been enlightened to college.
Ooh.
So for the most part, I think it's a consensus of if you're going into something that doesn't require you to have a degree or some kind of like alternative source that you can get a requirement from, then for the most part, being self-educated or by trusted peers or adults or something, or having your own sources is usually what people more advocate for or go towards because it not only saves them like thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, but they benefit more off of it. And then for the other side is whenever you want to go into a field that does actually require a degree, then that's where you see most of the enlightened students going to college, and it's still a ton of money, but in something that they want to pursue further, it's kind of a requirement, so then it's just the internal battle of colleges, and I have a bone to pick with school, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whenever you take tests and such, and if you get anything wrong on it, you can't know what you got wrong. Like, they won't tell you, they won't go over a question similar to it. They won't help understand anything. Not a single teacher is willing to go over anything or let you know anything you get wrong. And so then it's like, well, then what on earth is the point of a test?
That's a really good question.
They say, what you do and you don't learn. So what happens when you figure out what you don't learn? Oh, well, I guess you'll just never know it. Or just don't care.
No, let's explore that. I think you've got a really brilliant question. What is the purpose of a test in school?
Yeah, normally to kind of see where a student is excelling at, to see do they understand the material, do they not? And the problem is a lot of the questions, in my experience, are they want you to pick the answer that they want it to be. And so some of them is like, which one is right, where there's, or they'll have a question and there's like two or three right answers, and it'll be a situation, okay, which one's most accurate? And at that point, what you have is an opinion, and opinions vary. And that was one of the things in classes like humanities classes. Like, those often have a lot of different opinions surrounding it. And so a lot of the questions are kind of geared toward that. So
do you think it's part of the indoctrination?
Some tests can be effective engaging.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Some tests can be effective engaging, like, what you learn and how much you excelled at the material in the class. But sometimes tests have the opposite effect because of the kind of material that was covered and the kind of questions asked, it has an opposite effect of the kind of material. Because depending on what you learn, how you're tested on it should be different because it is all different. Like how you take a math test is different than how you take an English writing test, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the questions are different. So you'd think that the format would be different, but it's generally not.
Do you, and we've talked about this actually off the air a little bit, because I've seen some of the questions she's talking about. Are most of your tests multiple choice, computer graded, fill in the bubble kind of tests now?
Yeah, most of them are, but there are some where it's a type in or drop down. Like there was one test, there was a question about like a leader with complete control is like an authoritarian or whatever. And I put dictator, and they wanted despot. But the only problem is they didn't put cruel anywhere in the explanation. So therefore, dictator would be more specific rather than despot. But they wanted despot. So that in that situation, I got that question wrong because it's not exactly what they wanted me to put. But it was still a right answer. So...
But
those can pose problems too because it's all computer graded. Everything's graded by the computer. The teachers don't do anything in grading.
Well, which leads to my next question. Do you think the teachers know the answer themselves or could explain what the answers are?
Honestly, and this is just my experience from kind of like the last 2.5 years that I'm mainly looking at this point. It was a different scenario in when I was going to school in person rather than doing an online curriculum through public school.
Mm-hmm.
So in this, and a lot of this comes from, like, college classes, which is kind of odd because you'd think they'd be the ones that knew the material. But when I go in and I ask questions or I'll go in and I'll, like, highlight the passage and then I'll send it to an email asking questions, I've never gotten any kind of feedback on anything I've ever asked or any of the questions at all. So
no, I'm not surprised.
And there was one time I actually asked the teacher, I was like, is this the thing where you're just kind of an administrator or do you actually know the information? And then I was asked my question. They said, no, we know the information. But they never replied to the second part of my question for them to expand on the question of the material. And I was like, yeah, I don't believe that.
That's hysterical. Don't take this the wrong way, but you remind me of me. It's exactly the kind of thing I would have asked in school and probably did. Oh, no, I was terrible. So I hope I'm a good influence in that respect. But you seem to be doing just fine on your own. You know. So this is exactly the kind of question I asked. Sarcasm is the only thing that got me through school. Seriously. Because without sarcasm, I would have probably started breaking things and been like a radical, vandalizing hooligan. I probably would have pulled the fire alarms. I mean, I was that disgusted with school. Nothing was – I had to amuse myself somehow. So I'd ask impossible questions all the time. I was known for it. Teachers would avoid me. They wouldn't call me. I had my hand up. I'd be right in front of them, front row, sitting right in their face with my hand up. And they still wouldn't call on me, because they knew what they were going to get. They were going to get an argument that they couldn't face. So it was hysterical. So education was actually was brilliant training for Action Radio, but not the way that, one would expect. So let's talk about these tests again. So computer-graded tests – so that means somebody programmed the computer. Somebody who programmed the computer doesn't know the full definition of despot. They made assumptions. And so this is, or this indoctrination, probably a bit of both. There's assumptions. There's two things that work here, I think, assumptions and indoctrination. So the assumption part is they wanted despot because that's the answer that they wanted. I used to see this with when I was a flight instructor, that the FAA examiners, they didn't want necessarily the right answer. They wanted you to say it the way they wanted to hear it. If you did a technique on your flight exam, it wasn't so much – in fact, I had a student fail this, and I went to the FAA examiner and said, you guys are wrong. You can't do that to my student. They failed him, not because he did the maneuver wrong. He did it to the tolerances that are in what they call the practical test standards, the guideline for flight exams. But he didn't do it the way they wanted. It was a maneuver called the lazy eight, and the examiner said, well, it's supposed to be like a dance. It's supposed to be pretty. It's supposed to be – I said, like, show me that in the standards, can you? No, it's not there. I said, so my student performed to the correct standards, right? And they did maneuver correctly. Well, yeah, but it wasn't pretty. Oh, please. I mean, so this is the kind of arbitrary crap that I had to deal with in flight instruction. It's the same thing here. You were absolutely right that a dictator could be a benevolent dictator. You do what I do, which is read into the question. What are all the possibilities? And when you do that, you realize that any three answers of four could be argued for. Now, they want what they say is the most accurate.
Yeah.
Right? Go ahead. What are you thinking?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, some of them are different, too. Like, sometimes, like, in history or like, humanities classes, there'll be questions of the impact on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or what was
mm-hmm.
the kind of feel of it towards society and things like that. And in the answer choice, they'll have, like, two or three of the question options of the four that are listed that are correct. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, it becomes an opinion of what you think was the most impactful, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. So if you had, here's the problem. You can't write out your explanation. See, I don't believe in bubble tests. Bubble tests are impossible because I can argue for any, at least two, sometimes three of the answers. Now, I took a sample. This is, you're going to laugh at this. I took a sample LSAT. It's the Legal Scholastic Aptitude Test. That's what they test law school people on. Some of the reasons I thought I wanted to be a lawyer, but I didn't want to go through law school because I would just bypass it. I could study it on my own, like you're saying, right? So I did so badly on the LSAT. They did a sample test. I did horribly on it. I mean, horribly. I only got like 20% of the questions. Now, I was convinced that every one of my answers was absolutely correct, but it wasn't what they were looking for. They wanted you to think like a lawyer. It's like, why don't you think like a lawyer before law school? Aren't you supposed to indoctrinate me in law school? This is why I have such contempt for most lawyers, judges, and especially the judges on the Supreme Court. This is why. This started back when I took this sample test. It was a bunch of BS. It was insane, the things that they were doing. I've forgotten the exact questions. This was back, 40 years ago. But it was pretty crazy, actually more than that, probably 45 now. But it was horrible. It was just as bad then as it is now. That you can't argue. You can't argue with the computer. You can't argue with the bubbles. And what does the term most accurate mean? Either something's accurate or it's not. It's an infinitive. It's like most pregnant. You either are or you aren't. Most accurate. But any of these infinitives. It's like the most severe war. All war is severe. That's what's called war. So these infinitives, they sort of generalize. How would you define most accurate? How's that for a term?
Yeah, that's what you see a lot too. And so for most accurate, gosh, it's like put in the simplest form too, so it's kind of hard to explain mm-hmm. that, but whatever is closest to the truth or the result of it.
Closest to the truth. Is the truth not an infinitive also? Can something be almost true?
Yeah, but then it's still wrong.
But it's not true then, is it?
Almost true, it's still wrong, but...
Right, it's still not true, yeah. Yeah. Can something be more true than something else?
Yeah.
Oh. You can argue
weird.
More
so
important.
So if you have two things that are true, then one can't be more true than the other, because truth is true. There's not really a degree.
Okay.
But if you have something that's not true and something that is true, then technically I guess you could say the one that is true is more true, maybe. I don't know.
No, I mean, this is why I ask these questions. Again, there's no right answer. There might be. But there's no – I'm not looking for a specific answer here. A lot of times I love asking open-ended questions. And this is something they don't do on tests. If you'll notice, the questions that I ask you are completely open-ended. You could argue any number of possibilities, and I'd be fine with it. That's not the point. The point of the question is to talk about the question and explore possibilities. And that's something you can't do in a bubble test. So you have to repeat back what they want, what they've already ordained as the correct answer. Well, what if there are many correct answers? This is why I like short answers and essay tests, that those are the only ones that allow you to express yourself. And you could also argue afterwards, well, here's what I wrote and here's what I said. And then it becomes subjective again. Well, that wasn't the most accurate answer. Well, yeah, I was, and here's why. So this is why SAT, I'll tell you, I think I've told you this story before. A freshman chemistry in college, and this is back when I was doing things I should not have been studying, because I went into politics and economics. But anyway, so I took first freshman chemistry course, and it was all numbers. And I'm like number dyslexic, okay? You'll notice me mixing up numbers all the time. That's why I have a calculator to do the simplest math things, right? So I was doing great in chemistry. I knew the theory. I was explaining the theory, the atomic bonding, covalent bonding. I could explain all that stuff to the A students, but they did better on the test than I did. Right, because they got the right answers, because they pushed the right calculator button. I was notorious for making subtraction errors, even using a calculator, because I pushed the wrong button and I didn't see that I'd made a mistake. So I'm near failing, yet I know more than the A students do. So I went to the professor, Professor Bernasconi. How's that for a memory? This is back in 1981, right? Freshman chemistry. I said, Professor Bernasconi, I said, I'm doing horribly on your test, not because I don't know anything, but because I don't do the math well. I don't do the formulas as well, and I'm pushing the wrong buttons. Oh, we always test this way. I said, can you give me an essay test? He's like, what? No, of course not. It's freshman chemistry. We don't do that. Why not? So this is why I say I know where you're coming from. I was arguing for an essay test in chemistry, and they wouldn't do it. Bubble tests, math, formulas. So this is chemistry. So I said, so the theories don't matter. The fact that I can sit down here and talk to you, give me an oral exam. Let me explain it to you. I can tell you exactly what's going on with all these reactions. No, no, we this is how we test. So believe me when I say I know exactly what you're talking about. What do you think? And then I got another topic for you.
For me, I'm a straight A student, but I still have problems with the education because I used to think like, there's one thing if you have like math kind of test, but for me personally, I don't have any like trouble with like number or dyslexia or anything like that. But for math, you know, just solving a problem and writing in the number or just picking a bubble either way is fine for me. But in questions such as like history or humanities or other things such as that, I think it would be more effective, of course, with a teacher that knew the material well and stuff. If they would ask a question and then you expand it and you wrote in your answer in expansive form and then the teacher would grade it. And then if it was wrong or they didn't like your answer, then you could actually go and talk to the teacher about it and figure out, okay, why did you get the information wrong? Was there something like majorly important that you left out or different things like that? I think that's a more effective way to learn, to be able to actually explain what you had learned or the knowledge that you have from it.
Uh-huh.
More than just picking an answer on a possibility.
Yeah. If you go to my Substack, gregpenglis.substack.com, there's a 7-part series. It's a 14,000-word article, so I broke it up into 7 parts, about 2,000 words each, that I think you'll find fascinating. But the way that I test is for a test to be successful, you have to be able to teach a younger student, and they have to be able to understand it. So if you can teach it, that's the measure of how well you know something. And I learned that from flight instruction. That I really didn't know flying until I started teaching it. And this is where all the inadequacies showed up. It's like, oh, well, I guess I don't know that as well as I thought I did. So then I have to go back and study and have to work at it. So if I could explain something to somebody, that's how I knew I knew it. If I could demonstrate something to somebody and they could demonstrate it back, that's how I knew I was doing the right thing. And so that's how the whole model of education is based. I think you'll find it really fascinating. I know you're busy, but when you get a chance, you know, do it bit by bit. Like the 3rd or 4th part, I think I get into testing. An entirely different way of testing. One more question on this, because this actually is quite fascinating. Let's take something that the Pianki and I talk about. Pianki's on live chat. Civil War. And so if the question, let's pick a history area. So let's say the question said, what is the most significant aspect of the Civil War? Slavery would be like the first choice. The second choice would be federal taxes on the independent.
That's the exact kind of question that I would get.
Okay, good. Well, let me give you some possibilities here. I want you to argue for each one. This is a little experiment. This should be fun. So the question is, what is the most significant aspect of the Civil War? And so the question, you know, option A is slavery. Option B is imposing taxes from the federal government on the states. Third would be, the states' desire to be independent of a corrupt federal government. Pick something else. I don't know. Agriculture versus industry.
The expansive death of Americans.
Yeah, there you go. You know, so I mean, you can pick your own option, okay? I mean, you can pick any answer you want and argue it. So if you got a question like that, we know what the answer is they want. They want slavery, right? That's the answer they want.
Yes.
But, your turn.
I think I've actually had a question that was like that.
Oh, tell me what happened. What'd you do?
That answer.
Now I'm curious. All right, this is great.
Yeah. I don't remember all the questions and answers, but I do know the answer. I don't remember all the questions and answers, but I do know that it was about, like, the most significant, like, results or main point of the Civil War. I remember having a question like this and having the same dilemma.
I mean, secession, the ability of states to secede, that could be the most significant aspect of the Civil War. Considering that the Southern states did that and formed the Confederacy. That, to me, is the most significant aspect of the Civil War. Was slavery not important?
Like,
of course it was.
Undermining the flaws within the government system.
Yeah. There would have been no Civil War without secession.
There's no answer to
something
like it.
I think I interrupted you. Say that again.
There's a ton of different answers that any single person can give, because I don't think the most significant part about the Civil War is just one answer. I don't think it can be.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. Yeah. So in other words, you could pick, you know, A, B, and C or all of the above, but that probably wouldn't. Was that an option? Did you have an all of the above possibility on your?
On some questions, there will be an all of the above. There's even an all of the above, even on questions where it's not all of the above. But, or there's not, they do just want you to pick one.
Okay. All right. Let me change things up a little bit here. I want to talk about, I was going to do the title of the show, you know, China and the Philippines are playing bumper cars with their ships in the South China Sea. Then I realized I forgot I had a guest. I got Robin Tout in the third hour. She's a crusader against breast implants, having survived them, got cancer, got all kinds of health problems. We're finding out horrible things about that. So that would be an interesting third hour. And of course, Josie's in the second hour. But one of the things that what I think is the most underreported story right now is that the Chinese Coast Guard is bumping into, they're actually ramming Philippine ships in what they're calling the South China Sea. So if you were President Cannon, let's give you a promotion here. What would you do about it? Do you know about that story? I think I probably posted it way too late for you to read it. I mean, I can give you more details, but basically that's what's happening. It's in Philippine territorial or international waters. The Philippine Navy and I guess Philippine militia, they're calling it, have ships that are supplying Philippine outposts, military outpost islands in what they're calling the South China Sea. And the Chinese Coast Guard, not even the Navy, the Coast Guard, right? they're ramming these ships, they're bumping into them. I mean, nobody's died yet, but this is pretty belligerent action. What do you know about this? Anything so far? I can give you more details. I'm going to pull up the article.
I kind of just think it's hilarious. They're bumping into their ships.
Yeah, this is from India. Let me give you this story. It's from India. It's an Indian source. Sorry, Priyanka's on the line. I'll get to you before we get to Josie. So as tensions flare up at disputed South China Sea again as Philippines and Chinese vessels collide. Says a Chinese Coast Guard vessel collided with a Philippine supply boat, and later a Philippine Coast Guard vessel was struck by a Chinese maritime militia ship. What's a maritime militia? This is interesting words here. Says the incident marks the latest flare-up in territorial disputes between China and the Philippines. Okay, it says the Philippines on Sunday accused a Chinese Coast Guard ship and an accompanying vessel of ramming a Filipino Coast Guard ship and a boat carrying military supplies in two separate instances near the highly contested Second Thomas Shoal. No idea where that is. We'll have to look it up. Flaring up tensions between the two countries in the disputed South China Sea. A Philippine official said, Dateline, I should do my news theme, right? Dateline. A Philippine official said there were no injuries among the Filipino crew members, and an assessment of the damage to both vessels is underway, yada, yada, yada. Well, here's where it gets funny. Let me see if I can say what they're talking about. There's one where they talk about it not being, you know, professional on the part of China. The Philippines behaved very professionally. This is not the way to handle this. Let's see if I can find it here real quickly. So why is China doing this? You know, Chinese Coast Guard ships. Yeah, all right. Oh, come on. I got to find it. Anyway, but the here we go. Several CCG, that'd be the Chinese Coast Guard, and militia ships, including at least one Navy warship, later emerged and formed a blockade in the high seas off the shoal. Chinese radio operator asserted to the Philippines vessels that Beijing has, quote, indisputable sovereignty over the Second Thomas Shoal in outlying waters. To avoid miscalculations, leave and keep out. Miscalculations? This is great. But I want to find that there's one paragraph I should have highlighted earlier. But it talked about, they said, well, the Philippine Navy has performed professionally, and then all this kind of stuff, and, you know, all this. Like, that's not how you handle this. They got to get creative. What would you do? What would you do to stop China? You don't want to start a war. You don't want to shoot the Chinese vessels, because then China's going to, like, you know, nuke your whole country. So what do you do to retaliate against China without starting a war?
Well, the thing is, it's very tricky because China does want to go to war with America. They've literally published a statement of it. But with it, I don't know enough about the ongoings of the situation or anything, even just with the spiel that you told me, to give, like, a good or accurate answer of what's probably the best idea. But if I can look back, I was really happy with the way that McKinley handled the Spanish-American War. He was like, okay, we're going to figure out everything first and see what happened here, especially with the youth, and then we'll figure out what to do, because we don't want to go into a conflict that we don't know for sure we should be in. So he waited, and they came back and said, yes, the Spanish bombed our ship, and then came back years later, and it turns out they lied to McKinley. And
yeah, I've heard that before. Bay of Pigs, Kennedy. It's an ongoing theme.
But,
yeah.
But to McKinley, when they came back and said, yes, they did attack us, he was like, okay, I guess we have no choice then, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think his approach similar to that, where it's like with caution to avoid as much conflict and danger, but still, you know, safety, security was right. And so I think the main point is just figure out everything. There's a word. I'm not going to remember the word right now, am I?
That's okay.
Figure out the situation of what happened and why it happened, other than the territorial disputes and how far it can go. And if they're ramping up, or I guess China is ramping up to, mm-hmm. I don't know, attack the Philippines or whatever. See what's going on, I guess, is the first step. And then we can make accurate decisions.
Yeah. Here's the quote I was looking for. It says, through the years, this is from the Philippines, Philippine National Security Advisor Eduardo M. Ano. So this is from the Ano Annals. He says, through the years, our resupply sorties have always been regular and routinary. I guess that's Indian for routine. He says, our sailors have met Chinese vessels' dangerous maneuvers with utmost patience, competence, and professionalism to avoid any accidents or untoward incidents. That's like miscalculations, right? And oh, no, I'm sorry. That's Vice Admiral Alberto Carlos, commander of the Armed Forces of the Philippines, AFP, Western Command, WESTCOM. Utmost patience, competence, and professionalism. Is that how you'd handle it? It's not how I'd handle it.
Well, if it's a one-time incident where China decides to just bump a ship, which is still just so funny to say, then I think it handle it professionally, just being like, oh, whatever, one thing, just brush off and let's try and not make anything bad happen is one.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, part of it might be smart, but, you know, if China's like, no, I want a conflict with you, then, I don't know, maybe a different avenue would be sufficient in defense,
okay.
But I don't know.
Here's what I thought, and then I'll get Pianchi on. But so my idea was, you know, me, I'm big into PSYOPs, psychological operations. You know, I think there's a lot to be gained. Having dealt with narcissists and other psychologically deranged people since I was born, you know, I'm getting kind of good at it. So what I would do is embarrass them, humiliate them, don't give them an excuse to cause a war, but make them look stupid. And so I was wondering if there's such a thing. I don't even know if there is such a thing, but we should develop what I call the rope gun. So a rope gun would be fired above water, underwater. It would be a rope that would entangle their propellers and just disable the ship. It's not an act of war. It's just kind of mischievous, actually. You know, let's just disable it. Or you know, they have these gun things that fire a pulse. You know how you shut off a car engine by shutting off the computer? Police have something like that. Have you heard of that? They have this, all right. Well, let's just make a big one and disable the whole ship. Just leave them in the water. Just leave them dead in the water. Just zap them. You know, shut off their engine. That's what I do. The other thing I thought of, and this is going to get a little crude, but I still think it's funny. There's a bunch of farms in the Philippines. What they should do is collect up all the manure, the fertilizer, the poop, you know, from the farms, and just bomb the Chinese ships. Just hit them with poop bombs. It's not going to damage anything. It's going to humiliate them like crazy. It's going to infuriate them. But wait, what do you say? Wait, we dropped a bunch of manure on your ship. And what are you going to do about it? Are you going to shoot us? You know, I mean, especially if it's in Philippine waters. This is the kind of thing I would do. All right. But I get creative. I'm one of the Republican geldings to be at the border when all Brandon's illegals were coming in and just start handing out cards. Don't get comfortable. You aren't staying. You know, that's my psychological operation. What do you mean we're not staying? You're not staying. Don't get comfortable. You're not going to be here for a long, you know? And of course that would cause the Brandon insurrection to go nuts. But that's the kind of thing I think is interesting. People have lost their sense of humor. They've lost their sense of just infuriating, you know, tweak the nose of the enemy and then run away. You know, they because you don't want to fight because Sun Tzu, they're stronger. The Chinese Navy is stronger than the Philippine Navy. I'll tell you right now. I don't even know the numbers, but they're stronger, right? So how do you get back at them? You make them look stupid. Maybe secretly paint happy faces on their ship. Have a nice day. You know, things like that. That's the kind of stuff I do. Brianna?
You should be a foreign policy advisor.
I should. Listen, I'm open. Hire me. I'm available. For a large consulting fee, which would go to Action Radio, I'm available. Or just listen to the show. I mean, I give this stuff away for free. Let's see what Pianchi would do. Pianchi, what would you do if you were in the Philippines?
Well, I heard you say that China would nuke the Philippines. You shouldn't say that. That's really bad.
Okay. All right. Let me take that back and say they won't. They would certainly sink Philippine ships. If Philippine ships fired on the Chinese would sink those ships.
Now, you know, you had Israeli ships fire on the USS Liberty.
Yeah, they did.
And actually killed some U.S. soldiers.
What year was that? That was the 60s, though, wasn't it? Or was it the 50s? When did that happen?
I don't remember directly. I just, you know, can put the names in the internet. But,
yeah.
You know, you're getting back to that question about your choice. The right choice would have been economics instead of the choice that, like you may mention, that they want you to answer. And another point.
Which question?
The
Civil War question?
Powell,
Wait, hold on a second. Let's keep the issue. I want to keep it separate so everybody can follow us. Are you talking about the Civil War question of what was the biggest?
The Civil War question that you threw out there.
Economics. Okay, so let's put that as another option. Hold on. Let me get a response from Brianna. That's a good point. Economics, would that have been something you would argue? Brianna?
No way.
Yeah. Let me tell you the reason why. Because in the Constitution, the Indians are sovereign nations. Okay. And at the time of the Civil War, when it came down to releasing their property as a sovereign nation, they said, we wouldn't release our property. We would sell it back to you, which they did in 1866. So the states were sovereign, and they considered that aspect of their society as property. And the U.S. was wanting to take it away from them. I mean, that's just the way it was.
Okay. Makes sense. I still think that I'm trying to think of an incident in history where comedy or just instigating or psychological operations have been very successful. I can't think of anything offhand, but that's what I do. You know, if you're the weaker person, I used to do this in school, when there was a big bully picking on me. I remember some guy tried to pick a fight with me. This is years ago, right? It was like junior high or high school. I forgot exactly when. Big guy, he would have killed
me.
It was obvious. Wait, hold on. Let me finish my story. No, don't go away yet. No, hold on. So here's what happened. So I said to this guy, and of course there's a crowd starting to gather around because he hated me just because I'm me, right? And I was pretty tall, but I wasn't very strong in those days. So I said to him, he said, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to do this. I said, yeah, you probably are. I said, but you got to think about one thing. And I looked at him. I said, if I knock you to the ground, if I get one lucky punch, if I just lay you out flat, you are never going to live it down. And he looked at me, his doubt in his mind, right? Because I was bluffing the whole thing, right? The guy was going to kill me, And the crowd's starting to laugh. It's like, oh, yeah. If Pengel's looking down, it's all over, So just that thought, just that instigation in his brain that I might get that one lucky punch and knock him out, lay him out flat, that end of the fight. Oh, yeah. So, okay, great. Well, let's talk about this later. And I walked away. Piaggy, your turn.
Yeah, and then you were talking about the education. That's why I come. Well, college is great because it causes the student to participate in rigors that they would have to be well prepared for coming up through their earlier educational career. And I made a reference.
Well, do they do
my
that anymore? Hold on a second. That's not a good point. I want to get Brianna's reaction to that. So the rigors of college. When I went to college, I remember having small classes, sometimes 5 and 10 people in seminars, and it was rigorous. You had to defend your arguments. It was almost like a thesis defending. You really had to stand up for what you said. Do they even do that in college anymore? Do you know some recent grads or people in school right now? How rigorous is that education? Or is it filling in bubble dots? Brianna.
So I don't exactly know how the material or curriculum is. I think different colleges and different classes may have a different way of doing it. So there might be some that do have that. And then others that are just sit down and fill in the answers. I remember we went to look at one college, and they had a big focus on conversations and communication. Their main focus of the class is they're going to talk about everything and talk through it and have discussions over all the topics.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, and then the test would reflect those. And so that was really exciting to me, because that's the kind of education that is good, where you're communicating with everybody else in the class and not just sitting next to them, and you're having conversations about the stuff that is taught to you or that you read. And then you can dive deeper into all the subjects to actually understand more than just what the book tells you. While others, it's here's all the curriculum, and then this is what your test is going to be like at the end. It's like, okay, here's your study guide. Make sure you know this so you can take the test. And that's for other classes. And that's what my experience has been so far in college classes, is they have the different reading materials, some video explanations and such. They have your small quizzes. And then they have a study guide like, know all this, take their two big tests, and then you're done. And they're all like multiple choice tests. So.
Yeah, see, that was my problem, is that if college is like high school, what's the point of college? I mean, you can learn this stuff on your own at that point. College is supposed to be different. I agree with Pianki.
Oh, really?
Go ahead, Pianki.
Yeah, when I was in school, we used to have 10 pages of homework out of a book and no less than 100 math problems. Then we had to show how we derived at the answer. And like I say, when you go to some college students may spend 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning working in the library on projects that they as a team is working on. So that there is very important because it prepares you for what you're going to actually encounter in the real world. And another point, instructors, I think, are better than teachers. Now, you can use teachers in the early elementary ages, but when you start getting in middle school, you should need to have instructors, especially those that's coming from industry, and they can instruct you on how things are done in industry in which you're probably going to merge into.
Okay, that's an interesting point. So instructors versus teachers. Like I was a flight instructor, okay? I'd love to teach again. I taught many people how to fly. Young folks, you know, as young as high school and as old as 75. And if I taught them wrong, you know, the consequences were potentially fatal. I had to teach them properly because they were going to go fly and they're going to fly with family members and friends and things like that. So I had to teach them properly. There were consequences to me teaching badly. So I did the best job I could. And it actually worked out really well. A lot of students came back saying, hey, I handled this situation, you know, because of what you taught me. So that was like gold to me. But instructor versus a teacher. Pianki, what do you – you started to give an example there. What's
the difference? Let me give you an example. If your kid is playing sports, you got everybody out there on the football – coaches telling the kids, this is how you hold the ball. This is how you run the ball. Okay. Well, the same sort of effort should be applied in the educational process. And I was going to tell Brianna, the key component in the direction of your learning is your parent. Your parents should lay out the synopsis on what you learn and how you learn. They should know that. It shouldn't be up to a school board. A school board just carries out the administration form. But the direction in which you as a student, your child, that should be up to the parents and the family. And they should dictate to the school board, this is what we want for our children to learn.
Brianna?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's kind of like a growing movement, too, is parents trying to be more involved. Because I think that's one of the benefits to COVID, which you really don't hear a lot of benefit to COVID. But it really was because if the shutdown didn't happen, the parents would not be enlightened to what has actually happened in the school system because the students in the school system have been in there the whole life. They don't know that a lot of the stuff they're learning is what they're supposed to be learning or that their curriculum is incorrect or different scenarios such as that. So, like, for example, in chemistry or biology, I think it was more focused on biology, but what we learned is that everybody comes from purple bacteria. And that's how humanity was evolved throughout time. So we're all just like clumps of bacteria walking around and breathing. And they don't even mention the evolutionist or the creationist point of view.
Right.
The thing is, evolution is just a theory. It's an unproven and actually disproven theory.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't put creation in there because it's a theory and it's not proven. And so their basis for it is incorrect. And then there's the other one that's like, oh, it's religious theory. And so that's the whole point of not adding it in there is because it's a biblical base, not just because it's a different theory. So they don't teach a different theory other than evolution. And if parents were involved in that, and especially a lot of those that are faith-based that, you know, teach their children outside of school that humanity was created through creation, then those would be put into the curriculum system, but it's not. Because, like Pianki was saying, it was the school board doing it, and the parents haven't been involved.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a fascinating thing. So they assume evolution. It's one of those assumptions out there, like slavery for the Civil War. They assume evolution. But you can't prove it. You know, because of DNA, I mean, this is, if in order for this to happen, DNA would have to change enough from one organism to the next, that future organism could not, you know, produce offspring with the previous organism. So another, but the process of cell division doesn't allow for that. It doesn't allow for the creation that much of those differences.
But DNA does
even with
change.
Mutations. Well, it does change, but does it change enough to create? Wait a minute, hold on. Does it change enough to create a separate species? So this is where evolution falls flat on its face. Okay, see, I disagree
no,
with that.
Let me give you an example.
Right.
Carrot. A carrot is orange, but in
right.
Africa, you pull a carrot up out the ground, it's white.
Is it still a carrot?
So it changes. It's still a carrot.
So
it's
genetically,
a white carrot.
Right, so is that? But is that an adaptation, or is that an evolution? See, like they use the finches in the Galapagos Islands. That's an adaptation, not an evolution.
No, let me tell you something else. You can take a coconut
sure.
grove. A coconut
right.
grove is long and narrow, and can be narrow. You
mm-hmm.
can throw it at the far end, one end of the coconut grove where the trees are diseased. And as you go down, the disease stops. That's because the trees put up their own defense of what's coming in to destroy them. So it is an evolution.
Yeah, see, I think it's still adaptation.
Usain Bolt is an evolution. Look at how he was and what he was accomplished. So in that particular paradigm, sports, track and field, you're seeing people evolve into a physical aspect where they're able to do what they've never been able to do before.
No, but they're just changing. Like, we're taller than we used to be in the 40s. You know, I've ridden streetcars made in the 40s. But that's an adaptation. That's nutrition. That's exercise. That's better health. That's better medicine. Contrary to what's going on now, but we're not changing
and all
species.
Along the way,
we're still humans.
All along the way, your physical aspects change. They don't
but you're still not a separate species. Go ahead, Brianna. Your turn.
It's
Why don't you throw
lifting
it in
weights, right?
Say that again.
It's like lifting weights. Your body. It's like lifting weights.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you don't use your arm muscles and stuff, they're going to stay the same. But like because there's evolution and evolving. And then there's the evolution theory. And when using the evolution theory, like in biology, it's like we all came from bacteria. And we
mm-hmm.
don't have, like, any special value or intentional design. But when talking about, like, what Pianchi is saying, like, because humans, like, change, you know, that is true. We can evolve in different ways. Like, if you lift weights, your muscles will evolve into being stronger or bigger. You'll be able to carry more weight than you actually started doing a different action. And it's kind of like what you were saying, Greg, too, is that it's a change. It's an evolve or a change, too. And that our body is kind of set up for some of those changes.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have intelligent design because in each one of our cells, and it's proven that each one of our cells is like a tiny machine of all these different parts. And in all these tiny parts of each cell, it's a different thing, right? And for every... And, mathematicians have calculated, I haven't because I don't like math and I don't want to do that much, but they've calculated the possibility of even just one cell completely forming. And basically it's a miracle for one cell to even be made and to work functionally perfectly in
mm-hmm.
accordance with itself.
Right.
And then to have hundreds and thousands in each individual human being and for all of them to work. And of course, sometimes there's mutations. But for all of them to work, I mean, is a miracle for just one to work? Because the chances are so rare because of all the tiny pieces that go into the function of a cell, and all
mm-hmm.
of them to work together, and then for your blood to pump, for all of your organs to work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of this is basically impossible to just happen by chance, or just evolve by chance, or just one chance mutation, that it all just happened perfectly. And so there has to be some kind of basis of an intentional design.
Yeah,
yeah,
I agree with you. But
we've
got Josie, so we're going to get to Josie in just a second. Let me just jump in with one thing here. For evolution to work, for the theory to work, that one species has to be able to create another species from it through mutation. And I don't think that's ever happened. I don't think you can document any case where one species actually created another species from it through mutation. Now, they adapt, they change, they get taller, they get smaller, they change colors, they get stronger. You know, that'd be like saying weightlifters. Do weightlifters automatically give birth to world champion weightlifters? No, the tendency might be there, but it doesn't happen. There are, you know, look at Mike Wallace and Chris Wallace. Mike Wallace is a fabulous journalist. Chris Wallace is an idiot. You know, you would think, though, that if all these traits were passed on. Yeah, go ahead.
Shrimp evolved to cockroaches.
You have to show me that one. So from shrimp, through mutations within shrimp, they actually created a separate species of cockroach.
Is cockroaches is traced back to shrimp, and also this theory. See, where is your sources for this creation? From where does it come?
Oh, and I just look at the universe, and I don't think it's an accident. I mean, it's really simple. There's no way. I mean, why do plants and animals have such similar DNA? Why do plants and animals have a circulatory system? Why are we so closely linked in so many different ways? I mean, every animal has cells. Every plant has cells. That can't be an accident.
You still apply it to the question. That's what human beings do that. When they're too lazy. Yeah, real quick. See, it takes hard work to figure out why this is like this rather than assigning it to something that you cannot see, feel, and touch. Why? You ask a good question. Why? So you got to do the work to prove the theory. And people don't like to do that. They like to assign
it
to something that's superstition.
Yeah. See, I don't think the evolutionary theory is improving. Let me get the last word to Brianna because I think she meant – Brianna, do you have to go now?
Sir.
Brianna?
Yeah, real quick, but I want to answer his question about, like, proving the creation. And the truth is, you can't prove creation, you can't prove evolution, because nobody can go back to the beginning and have the evidence to prove one way or the other, unless there's time travel, of course, and then we can all go back and see it for ourselves.
Let's go take
what
a look.
Happened, right? Or we get to heaven, we can ask God what happened. But, I mean, other than that, we just have to rely on what we believe and what we know and then use the evidence that we have found. Like, okay, evolution believes you can cross species, but we know that you can't because elephants and humans cannot breed and make a different thing, right, because it doesn't work. And I know Darwin supposedly wrote a second part to his theory of origin of species, basically saying that nope, his theory was wrong, and then he turned into a Christian and a Christian believer before he died. So, and many other people have taken his previous theories and used those as well. So, you know, with it can never be completely proven by man. So you kind of just have to use your evidence and the logic that you do have, and then compare it against both theories to tell you, okay, this makes sense, oh, this makes this false, or this makes this more true, and kind of go from there. Because you don't know until you're there.
Yeah, let me hold you up because I got Josie, and let's get you signed up. But of course, you're welcome to stay if you can. And I have to actually dash across the room and get my water, so I have to mute myself. This is the only reason we need a break right now. Brianna, why don't you go ahead, and thank you for your report.
And Brian, I look forward every week to hear your report, by the way.
There you go.
Thank you. It was a good conversation today.
Yeah.
This is Brianna Cannon with Government Inquiry on Action Radio. Goodbye.
She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Coffey knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Coffey. Okay, I made it. I got my water. I can do it in like 40 seconds.
You got your water. Good morning. Water is so important.
It is. Well, it is in the show. Listen, you try doing the show without water?
Dobre utro.
Yeah, I can't do the show. 3 hours talking without water, I'd be like gagging by like the second hour. Anyway,
yes.
How you doing?
Hey, and talking about water, that's a good subject.
Okay, let's do that.
What kind of bottle? What kind of water do you buy? Or you drink it from the faucet?
I have Brita filters, so I put it through a charcoal filter and replace it every like 2 or 3 months, whatever it is. Yeah, that's how I do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm, good. Mm. We found a place in Alabama about an hour and 15 minutes from Pensacola, from my store. It's called Red Hill Spring. So we've been going every 2 weeks to get lots of water for free right there. Because
has it been tested?
Our water.
Well, here's the good thing about our water in Milton. Yeah, I don't trust it either. But the good news about Milton water that we have here in Milton, Florida, they don't put fluoride in it. It's unfluoridated water.
In Milton?
Mm-hmm. I looked it up.
Is that what they say?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't trust any of our water, actually.
You don't
so
trust
every
anything.
Time I was drinking water.
You're,
you know,
you're a resident
what?
Skeptic. You don't trust anything. It's so funny. This is, I love talking to you. I really do. But, yeah.
Well,
as far as the sources, I don't think they could lie about that because they'd be subject to libel. If the town was fluoridating the water and they lied about it, you know, people that are susceptible to fluoride poisoning or any other kind of fluoride
mm-hmm.
problems,
yeah.
You know, they wouldn't be able to do that. Besides, there's no reason to lie about it because most places want fluoride for some stupid reason. Fluoride, you know, but there's a difference between pharmaceutical
no.
grade fluoride that you get at a dentist and industrial waste fluoride that they put in the water.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, no, it's not. That's why I'm glad we don't have it.
Fluoride.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Artis, he's been talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
That even if a drop goes in your eyes while you're taking a shower and all that, because they're putting a lot of poison in our water. Yeah, and I can tell the difference when I'm drinking this spring water than the regular bottled waters that we've been buying. And I'm like, I don't know which bottled water to buy. And I did buy a filter, and we haven't connected it for the house, but I don't even know if I trust that. So I don't
well,
know. It's a mess.
You're supposed to filter the shower water. I don't have a shower filter yet. That's on my list of things to do as I'm gradually improving my health. But
uh-huh.
the shower filters are really important. David Trombley told us about that. T-Bone, who's
yes.
military. And so he was at our medical medical freedom rallies at Blue Wahoo Stadium. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's helping out. I'm trying to get more veterans helping out. Just change the subject a little bit with our Citizen Legislation Day. So I've announced in the first hour, I'm going to be announcing it every hour of every show. January 7th is Citizen Legislation Day at the Imogen Theater. And I can now proudly announce that Dr. Judy Mikovits is going to be there. And so we have some amazing stuff. I'm going to try and get some, I'm going to see if I can get Brian Artis and some of the other folks out here. But that's going to be incredible. You can ask them. The water is a key thing. But Trombley's the one that told me about the shower filters. If you're filtering your drinking water, why aren't you filtering your shower water? That's a big question.
Exactly. I didn't think about it, to be honest with you. But you know what?
Same water. Absorbed through the skin.
It.
Yeah, yeah. But here's a question,
yeah.
too. But with the spring water, the key is the minerals. So water is water. Water tastes, if you have pure water is going to taste the same everywhere because it's pure water. But the difference is the minerals.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have mineral salts,
yeah.
you've got some good stuff in there. You got some iron, some copper, some whatever other minerals are in there. If you're granite, I don't know what's in there.
It just tastes so good. Let me tell you, Greg.
Well, that's
amazing.
Why. It's the minerals.
And you should see all the people lined up getting water over there all the time. You're going to see people coming with big jugs. I'm
wow.
about to go to get a 3-gallon. This guy showed up with about 6 or 8 bottles or 3-gallon bottles with a handle that he can carry because he was older. And I don't mind driving, so I'm going with 2 other friends. One of my friends, Filipino, her husband, they gave him 6 months to live because after the COVID vaccine, he had issues with prostate cancer, and she cured that with the drops, you know, the hydroxychloroquine.
No.
Yeah.
Hydrogen peroxide? No, it wouldn't be that.
Yeah, hydrogen peroxide, yes. She cured him in 6 months. The prostate cancer was gone, but now he has stuff going on in his face and all this, and I guess he took the shot, and I think he did the flu shot also, and he's in bad shape. He's in bad shape, and he stopped taking the drugs. He started believing in the doctor. So they just gave him 6 months. He just went under chemo, and she didn't want for him to go to chemo because she used to work in the chemo department. She knows exactly they're in just for the money, and she said they drag you along. They drag you along just for the money, and they know exactly that you're going to die, you know. So she used to work in that department. She's an RN. So,
back to David Trombley.
So
he had bone. Remember how David Trombley had bone cancer? He cured bone cancer with diet, exercise, and appropriate medicine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it can be done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It can be done.
God forbid I get cancer, but if I do, I'm coming to the wellness folks around here, the folks that I know. you know, the people that will first one I was going to call is David, you know, but it might be a different cancer. But I had a melanoma, which they cut out, which was the appropriate treatment then because mm-hmm. it was very small, very surface, and very early. I still have a big gash in my leg. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd rather have a gash in my leg than die. So, I mean, I'm not vain in that respect. So I don't care about that. But, yeah, I'm proud of it. Hey, look at this. You see my scar? This is really cool. Yeah, it's an AK-47 bullet. No, it's not. It's skin cancer. Anyway, let me change subject a little bit here because I want your opinion on this. Although the Philippines is not quite a Latina, area of the world. Well, maybe it is. I don't know. What do you think? I was talking with Brianne earlier. What do you think of the Philippine Navy being bumped? They're playing bumper. China's playing bumper cars with them, with their ships. Have you heard that story at all?
No, I haven't heard of that.
Okay. Mm-mm. All right. That'll save my next question. What would you do?
Many of the Philippine people understand Spanish, which is kind of cool, you know.
Well, isn't the Philippines? Wasn't it? I mean, didn't we get the Philippines in the Spanish-American War?
Well, I believe so.
Okay, so but, the Philippines they speak Tagalog and Spanish,
Tagalog.
and I guess English
they
too.
They have other dialects too, you know,
uh-huh.
among each other. Because I noticed I'm around a lot of Filipino, and they say, "Oh, but I don't understand her way," or I don't know, it's confusing, I guess.
Hmm.
But you guys uh-huh. were talking about school, and Bianchi said. The children you're talking about the children in school and all that,
mm-hmm.
and I always say school starts at home. Your parents have to teach you. Your parents have to educate you before you even go to school. Because one of my friends just started driving a bus for a living, school bus, middle school, and a young girl just got up from her chair with a brand new bottle of water and just hit him in the head while he's driving. Very dangerous because he could have blocked out or with a bunch of kids in the bus. And everything
is
in video because, you know, they have the cameras in the buses nowadays.
Right.
So,
well, that's actually, if that was an adult, I don't know what it applies to kids, but that comes under the Department of Transportation. Like when I was a tour guide driver, if anybody interfered with me driving, you know, I used to drive, remember I drove mm-hmm. the Ducks in San Francisco and the motorized cable cars. If anybody interfered with me, I could haul them up on charges before the DOT. That is a federal offense. They get arrested for that. Now, I'm not sure what they do with kids being juveniles, but it's the same thing. School buses come under Department of Transportation, and it's federal as far as I know. And so they could. That's mm-hmm. an assault if you assault the driver because you're endangering everybody on the bus. You're endangering everybody on the bus if you yell at the driver. I mean, it's distractions. Do you have any follow up on that? It is. Any follow up? Anything happened to the student? I mean, they should be expelled.
Well,
suspended for like
asked,
a month.
The school asked him if he wanted to press charge, and he said yes, but I think he felt sorry. But they did get that girl out of the bus. She's no longer in the bus, and I don't know if she's any longer in the school. I'm not sure yet. I have to follow up a little more.
Mm-hmm.
But the mom was freaking out because he talked to the mom and said, "I'm going to press charges on your daughter." And, you know, I mean, it's sad that the mom is in this situation, but your kids should know better, you know. And she's a middle school. She's not a four-year-old little child. She's,
where did she learn that? Where would you learn that it's okay to hit a school bus driver with a bottle of water? Where would somebody learn that?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, viciously, you know. And mm-hmm. Kids are beating up kids. And it's out of control nowadays. And I was watching a video of this teacher telling this girl to put your phone away because he's in the middle of teaching the class.
Mm-hmm.
And this young girl, she slapped him in the face when he leaned over and said, "Please put your phone down now." And she whipped him very hard in the face. And then the teacher, he said, "Put the phone away." And she didn't want to put it away. And then he reached in, he slapped her in the face.
Well, you can't do that. You can't hit the students back. But what you can do, now, do schools have any kind of disciplinary officer? They need like a sergeant at arms. Yeah, but you don't want adults hitting students.
Well,
you don't want adults hitting minors.
But what I'm saying,
now he can defend himself. He can certainly block, a hit coming or back up. you know, but he
yeah,
should
but
be able to confiscate the phone.
Slap him in the face.
No, you can't. Yeah, well, that's true. No. In that case, you know, in that case, then that's the you just take him to the office. Or, well, here's a, that's a good question. So what are they doing in schools in terms of discipline? Do they have, you need like two disciplinary officers. You need a woman to be able to physically restrain the female students. And you need some big dude to restrain, you know, the guys. But a male teacher should not be hitting a female student. That's wrong. However, the female student should be hitting the teacher. That's an assault, and she should be expelled. You know, I mean, we need to bring back expulsions and suspensions, and that's how you handle it. Or send her to juvenile court. I mean, that's an assault.
Yeah.
But why are students having cell phones in school anyway? I mean, the, you know.
I know.
Either,
it's so stupid.
Yeah. Well, that, but that's the school. Go ahead, Pian.
How come the teacher can't use corporate punishment? We used to do when I was a kid.
Ooh, so tell me about what happened to you, and then I'll tell you my story. So what was your corporal punishment story?
Mr. Berry had a big paddle. Paddle. He had a big paddle.
Right.
I tell you what, you've seen on that one movie. I can't think of the name of it.
Animal
House. Freeman.
Animal
House.
No,
that Morgan Freeman.
No.
Morgan Freeman played in. It wasn't Animal House.
Oh, Glory?
No, that was a war film. It had to do with a school setting. He was the principal.
To Sir with Love? No, that was but, British. So what happened?
And Bianchi, and the parents knew that if you behave bad, that the teacher will take care of you or your uncle or your neighbor's dad or mom. And you know what? It was okay, and we turned out to be okay. And, yes, I used to get whipped in the hands so bad by the stinking nuns. They almost made my hands bleed. And my parents knew, and they gave permission.
Yeah, what'd they hit you with?
Mm-hmm.
What'd they hit you with, Josie?
A piece of wood, yeah, flat.
A ruler.
Yeah.
Like a ruler?
Ruler sometimes, yeah.
I don't know,
Pianki. She had in her hand.
Wow. Pianki, did you get the paddle?
What about you?
Well, I'll tell you my story.
He had a paddle made up in wood shop, like a small canoe paddle with holes in it.
I love it.
So go faster? Right. Did he have a name on it? Did he have a, like, what was it called? Did he have a nickname for it? Like, you know, death paddle or something like that? Or, you know, or the boss?
The thing is, it did bring about respect and discipline, which is a void in schools today.
Yeah. Well, okay, so my turn is I got caned. When I went to Australia, I went from a Canadian public school to an Australian private school. And Canadian public school, boys and girls, co-ed. Australian private school is all boys. It was like the English system. You know, so when I hear that Pink Floyd song, you know, we don't need no education. You know, leave the kids alone. That's how I felt, right? Yeah, exactly, right. So, but I got caned. And we had a 3-foot bamboo cane. And I got whacked a couple times. Oh, yeah. Hurt on the hand, fortunately. But they had buttocks, wax. Or I remember one, it was in art school. The art teacher was brutal. Can you believe the art teacher? Right. Used to hit kids with a 3-foot-long ruler, wooden ruler. And, you know, I'll never forget this. One kid screamed, going, ah, just come back and do it again. This time don't scream. Okay, fine. You know, but we learned. You know, we learned very quickly that the caning hurts. It's stunned for a good couple of hours. You know, you hit with a bamboo.
Yeah.
This is what they whip people with in the Filipino when they give you lashes. You know, it's bamboo. And so the bamboo cane was very thin, but it hurt. Whacked my hand so hard it hurt for about 2 or 3 hours. It was still stinging. Went away. Mm-hmm. I was fine. Nothing, no permanent damage. But I got the message.
You're alive, you know?
I got the I never talked out
normal.
Of turn again.
Yeah, that's what we need in our schools now. We need discipline, and we don't have discipline. The children are in control of the schools. The children are in control at home with their parents, telling them what to do. Even killing the parents because of a stupid cell phone, you know, and
killing
that's
the parents?
Out of control.
Do you have a story on that?
Yes.
What happened?
Yes, right here in Gulf Breeze.
Really?
I forgot how many years ago, maybe 8-10 years ago, less. 16-year-old kid in Gulf Breeze with a 12-year-old little sister. The sister came to my church, one of my friends. And her son of this woman, she was like a little star in baseball. Super, super. I think I told you. Story's ugly.
I don't remember it. That's
so
okay.
So this young man was upset because the mom took the phone away, and he just grabbed the baseball bat and started whipping the mom in the head.
Oh my God.
And killing her. But he didn't kill her all the way, so he grabbed a knife and cut her throat, and then she was still alive, and then he shoved the knife in her eye. And the 12-year-old little sister watching the whole thing over a stinking phone, okay? So my friend did not go see him in jail. She was so bitter and angry because it's her sister that died. And sad at the same time, the nephew went to prison for life. And apparently it seems like he was taking some drugs at that time that he claimed that he doesn't remember nothing.
Well, he may claim that.
He claimed that. And finally she started going a couple years later. She forgave him since she's a Christian woman. She forgave him and she started visiting my prison. And it's ugly, let me tell you.
Well, you can forgive, but you don't have to forget. You don't have to excuse. You don't have to tolerate, but you can still forgive. Forgiving's for you. It's not for them. So that you don't carry the hate forever and ever. But this is interesting. Now there are just bad people. I mean, there are just genuinely evil people out there that do things like this. But the drugs is a key aspect. If you go to our vaccine project, I think you're both members. I'm not sure. I think I posted also on the special investigations page. 1 in 6 kids are on antidepressants right now. It's a ridiculous number.
And
we know that antidepressants if you look at the side effects, we've gone through the, I remember doing it for Ritalin back at WBY, but we can do it easily for Paxlovid, whatever those Lovox, whatever those weird drugs, I don't even remember the names, but anyway, but the antidepressants. But if you look at all of them, they all have side effects, homicidal and suicidal tendencies. Well, why would you give that to anybody? Yeah. That should keep them off the market.
I think it starts in the children's vaccine now that we know, according to Judy Mikovich, that she said a lot of the vaccines for the last 20-something years, they've been spiked completely for you to have all types of disease, including the gay situation that we have, transgender, you know, that you're going to be a woman instead of a
Curious about that.
That's what she
I
said.
Don't see. So what would be the benefit to that? Who would benefit from
to change
and
our country,
how would that work?
To change God's creation. Yeah, these people are evil and they're patient. I was talking to a lady that we then Zumba on stage Sunday in downtown Pensacola, and she was telling me her daughter's gay, and so I started asking her a question because I'm not afraid to ask questions at all. And I said, when did you notice that your daughter is the opposite, that she loves women? And she said when she was a tiny little girl, I remember she was like a boy. And she said, and it went on and on. And she says, I'm a tomboy myself, but not like that. She says, I noticed, and she was 7 or 8 years old. She goes, way back, I knew exactly. And she married another woman, she said. And I said, what does your family think about it? She said, well, everybody's happy. Because she's happy. But you know what, Greg? God is not happy because God did not make her a woman to marry another woman. She's supposed to marry a man. A man and a woman.
It's interesting. I agree with you. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm good.
Yeah, okay. I lived in San Francisco for 30 years, and so I was near the Haight-Ashbury just across from the Castro, and the tour guide industry, a large percentage of tour guides are gay, or lesbian, and it was quite interesting that one thing I learned, especially having friends of mine over time, of the women. Is that there's a lot of women that are like temporary lesbian. It's really kind of interesting. This is not talked about in the big circle, but it's this like permanent and temporary. Mm-hmm. The permanent ones look like, concentration camp guards. Sorry, that's just the truth. You're not the most attractive people on the planet, okay? But there's some lesbians who are absolutely gorgeous. And to me, those are the ones, the more feminine as opposed to the more butch ones. This temporary. It's really strange. They'll do it for a while, and then they'll decide that, you know what? I can tell you several cases, no names, of course, of women that were lesbian who then married guys. And so it's really, that's not talked about because that like goes against the grain. It's like, how can you do that? Well, I changed. I did, and they're happy and they have kids and life is great. So this is something that's not really talked about in the lesbian community. I don't know about the guys. I think the guys, once they're gay, they're gay. I don't know if they kind of go back and forth. Maybe the younger ones who are experimenting because they're told to do that in school. But let's get back to schools for a bit because you raise a really good point. How much of people that experiment with homosexuality are because school said, it's great, try it, you might like it? I mean, I never heard that in school. we were all heterosexuals. You know, in fact, I didn't even hear the word gay until I got to the United States. You know, so I was in a heterosexual world for most of my young adult life. It's only when I came here, and I don't know what probably started with Stonewall or Stone something or other, the riots and stuff, where I first heard the word gay, and that there were actually that existed. And then I got to San Francisco. I was like, oh yeah, okay, fine. But permanent versus temporary gay people. Have you ever heard of that? Let's start there.
I have. One of my husband's cousin. She, I guess she was like 18, 19, and she was liking my cousin that she was helping me at home, you know, with my daughter. Mm-hmm. She was like falling in love with my helper there, you know, and I'm like, what the heck is going on? But now she's married
to a
very wealthy man, has a couple
money.
Kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that was like a temporary thing that she was going through.
Uh-huh. So. Well,
and,
I wonder how often that happens.
Another case.
Yeah, go ahead. Tell me.
Another case, my mother-in-law was telling me back in the 70s, one of her best friends opened the garage door to get in, to put the car in when she, you know, manually. They didn't have a remote. She said manually, and her husband was in the garage having sex with another man.
Ooh.
And she just closed the door back, and she got in the car and disappeared, never came back home. Somebody came and got all her stuff. She was devastated.
I'm sure.
There was a gay kid in my neighborhood when I was growing up, and he grew up liking men, but then he married this woman, but on the side he was still having his little affair with men.
Yeah.
And everybody
yeah
knew
that
about
happens
it, but he had kids.
Yeah. Yeah, there's gay guys, and I know because my neighbor, you know, there are gay guys that want kids, and the only way they do that is to have wives, you know, female wives, and it's very selfish and very unfair. But this guy was a fabulous father, so you know, it's an interesting little contrast there. But that happens. There are women, there are lesbian women who marry guys to have kids, divorce them, you know, and then go on and then become lesbian again because they want kids. So how selfish is that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the Latina community.
Pianchi,
go
ahead,
then I'll ask my question. Pianchi?
Yeah, government play a big part in it. Like here, this government will recognize same sex, okay, but they won't recognize a male having more than one wife or a wife having more than one husband.
Unless you're in Utah.
I don't think they don't even there. But where in the world, Pianchi, this would be a good question for you. Where in the world do people have multiple spouses? And can wives have more than one husband, or is it usually husband has more than one wife? How does it work?
Cases where you can have where wives can have more than one husband. But I'm saying is that this government only does things that is ideal to them. Because who in the heck would ever thought that a man would be able to marry another man?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, you can't.
Obama.
You can have a union.
Obama.
Yeah. Well, did you ever see the Tucker Carlson report with Obama's gay lover from before he was president? Yeah. That's
a
whole story in itself.
You know, this a long time ago, and you said, no way. And Michelle Obama still has a little thing hanging. So, yeah, I've been saying that a long time ago.
Okay, I dispute Michelle Obama, but I agree with you absolutely because came out. Larry, what's his name? He said he you know basically did Obama in the back of a limo with cocaine. So
of course.
I mean that's pretty well that's out
we
there.
Know
he's
that
never
a
just,
long time ago.
Yeah, and Obama's never denied it either. That's the funny thing. He never came out and said that's a bunch of BS. You know, so I want to get into Obama's chef now that we mentioned that, but let's get back to this issue here.
Yeah,
so what do you think it means?
There's a couple of videos. Greg, there's a couple of videos where Obama slips. He's talking about Michael and I means Michelle's name is Michael. That's in two different occasions he slips and says Michael and I. Anyway, go ahead about the show.
No, no, okay, and it's interesting, and I've heard reports to the contrary, people that know the Obamas, you know, extremely well. You know, Michelle's a woman. To me, that's more of a distraction. It's an interesting thought, I don't think that's as valid as the fact that Obama's gay, because that's pretty much proven by the people that, you know, the men that he's been with have come out and said, yeah, I was with him, you know, and Obama's never disputed that. Well, let's go back to, I want to talk about the Latina community, for example, or the Latino community. Let's play in your ballpark for a while. So what percentage, especially you know, with the highly Catholic Latina population, what percentage are gay? And how is that, what are the views of homosexuality in the Latino community?
I don't know. I'm not sure the percentage, but they usually hide it pretty well, like if you're in a country. But now in America, a lot of Latinas, they're just in the open. But I don't know the percentage of that.
No,
and when
guessing.
I went to Cuba, in Cuba now it's legal to marry a man or to marry a woman. And, oh, my God, people were devastated when these criminals passed that new law in Cuba. Yeah.
Cuba's still Catholic, isn't it, for the most part? I mean, they don't – obviously the government tries to suppress it, but aren't most Cubans
still –
Well,
it was Catholic, but – yeah, it was Catholic, but then the communists didn't want nothing. They don't want for you to love God at all.
No, worship
That's
them.
That's the agenda about communists. Yeah. You need to worship them instead of God.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How about Black Americans, Pianki? Do you know how is homosexuality viewed?
What'd you say, Greg?
Homosexuality in the Black community, how's that viewed? Or what percentage?
Very, very negatively.
Okay.
Remember Bruce's place with Oprah Winfrey?
Who?
The movie Brewster's Place starring
Oprah. No, I don't
Oprah
remember it.
Winfrey.
I didn't see it. No, I didn't see it.
Yeah, well, that there gave a good depiction of how they visualize homosexuality amongst Black society.
Huh. Okay. I don't know it, so you'd have to fill me in. So you're saying very negatively viewed?
Yeah, you really won't know how. Look at Uganda. It puts you to death.
Well, that's not quite our country, but yeah, and it's interesting. Yeah, African, Middle East countries too. You know, so here's let's have a little fun here. All these folks that are coming into the country illegally, there's a certain percentage of illegal Muslims that believe that homosexuals should be put to death. How's that going to go over with the politically correct crowd? Are they going to tolerate it? Are they going to say it's cultural? And what's the gay community going to say? What are the LGBTQPMS crowd, as Josie calls them, which I think is hysterical? What are they going to say with all these illegals? No, that's actually a really great line. I'm stealing it, though, so I got to give you credit. But LGBTQPMS. I remember a lot of things. It's kind of funny when these things pop back into my head. But what's the politically correct crowd going to do when a bunch of Sharia Muslims who are coming into the country are going to start killing gay people? What's the LGBTQPMS, and what are the liberals going to do? Are they going to be tolerant? Are they going to – can we say, well, you can't
well,
kill a person because then you're Islamophobic. You know, I mean –
It's not just some arbitrary kill, but I imagine you, if you came on to somebody or by surprise, you would be in a very difficult position.
Yeah, men, don't try to seduce Muslim men. It's not going to go well for you. Just don't do it. It's not – you know, it could be a problem. But there's got to be gay Muslims. I mean, how do they handle it? Or do they just not say anything?
They super – they're like a mole, they're underground, deep underground.
Okay. Yeah, like the pedophiles, although they're becoming more open. Okay.
Well, that really gets you in trouble. That really gets you in trouble.
Yeah. So yeah, and this is so the country's gonna be changing. You know, ideally we get rid of all the illegals. Practically, you know, we're still gonna have a certain population, but there's gonna be some very interesting things happening. Over time, because of this mass illegal invasion brought on by the leftists and by the Republicans who did nothing about it. They could have stopped this, but they didn't because they're geldings.
But you know, Greg, going back to the Muslims, they don't like gay and all that. It's all a show. It's all a show. Maybe some of them don't like gay, but, you know, they kidnap a lot of young American children in our country every year to bring them to the big palaces so the gay Muslims can have them, you know, secretly in their palace and nobody knows anything about it. So,
you
yeah,
do.
The gays just in the Muslim, but they just don't want you to know.
That's where we need Dave Chappelle. Apparently he got in trouble for something he said that was anti-Semitic, but I'd love to get Dave Chappelle's take on black gay Muslims, just out of curiosity. Do we have any gay Muslim comedians? I'm just having fun today. I'm in a spunky mood. But do we have any openly gay Muslim comedians, stand-up comics?
I don't watch much of that. I don't know.
I don't either. I'm just asking
Maybe
the question.
Bianchi might know.
Bianchi, do you know? He's probably
no,
Bianchi,
that
do you know?
I know
what
Taiwan would even be pissed. And knowing it was a time in Taiwan, may still be. Where you can have kids for sex affairs.
In Taiwan?
No girls.
Are you talking about Taiwan, Thailand?
Thailand, I guess, yes. Thai something.
Thai something. We have several million people here. We don't want to offend, you know, for no reason. I mean, if there's a reason, I'll offend them, but not for no reason. I think it's Thailand's known for being sexually problem. There's like, you know, what was that song, One Night in Bangkok? Remember Murray Head? It was a group way back in the '80s group. Yeah, it was an 80s group. Yeah. You know, One Night in Bangkok makes a tough man humble or something like that. Anyway, it's great. Anyway, so, yeah.
American men used to travel there. And they put in a treaty that something like that would be reported, that person.
Yeah, I'm sure they still do.
I don't know how they do that, Wink. Yeah, I don't know how the heck you do that, but.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to Josie's report. Josie, did you have something for us today? We've been sort of rambling.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit. I wanted to give you a report on those two little girls from this girl from Honduras, you know. It's a miracle that the girls finally made it Saturday. They made it home. And she was calling her lawyer. She was calling a lot of people. I called the phone number where she was getting her phone calls, and I told them that we've been talking about it, and I was with a radio station, and I don't know if they freak out that we knew that they had the girls, and the girls made it back safe. But that's unusual because, let me tell you, our government is selling a lot of our children coming across, a lot of the illegal children. So the 6 and 8 year old made it home on Saturday. So praise God for that.
Good for them. That's wonderful.
You know,
what about
for political asylum with the mom? The lawyers helping them.
What about our hostages in Gaza? And Marco gave me a website. Mawan Rizwan, I guess, is a Muslim gay comic. So check that. Thanks, Marco. Appreciate it. Apparently, Marco was only hit a couple times by his parents, so he's in good shape too. Yeah, interesting. So let's talk about Israel and Hamas for a bit, because there was a poll that just came out that 40% of those 18 to 34 are younger generation side with Hamas as opposed to Israel.
Yeah.
This is not good.
Look at our country. It's in a mess right now. All the college kids love Hamas. But they don't know any better.
They had to learn that somewhere. Because if you described Hamas.
They're being paid.
Who's being paid?
A lot of these college kids are probably being paid. Like when Trump rallies at the beginning, 2015 and all that. A lot of these kids are being paid to be in the streets by Soros and all these criminals running our show because they don't have a clue. They don't even know how to read a stinking map. They don't even know where Gaza is.
You know where Israel is, yeah. If they saw how big Gaza was.
They don't
know. Yeah. Do you know what's interesting? Barry Shaw, who used to come on the show, I'm trying to get him on now that we have a Skype line, but Barry Shaw is posting a lot on the international group site, our Action Radio International News Group. And so I've let him just post everything because the war is going on there. And one of the things he posted was very interesting. It talks about Israel to Hamas, you know, said, look, you know, here's what we gave you in Gaza. So apparently Israel left Gaza in 2005, one of the dumbest things they've ever done. They should have stayed because they knew this is what happened. It's like dividing Korea in half, dividing Vietnam in half. You know, you're just asking for a war. Right. And so Gaza apparently was a paradise. It looked beautiful. They had parks, you know, they had a nice beach. It was a tourist place. I mean, Gaza would look really good. And so they gave it to Hamas and the Palestinians, and they totally destroyed the place, ruined it. You know, now it's a wasteland.
Yeah.
And they've you know, and they said, look, we gave you paradise, and all you did was launch rockets and try and kill us. This is your fault. And so check out the video. It's on my page. It's at the top of my Facebook page, and it's also on the
well,
the Action
Israel
Radio International News Group.
Belongs to the Jewish people, period.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It belongs to the Jewish people. The Palestinian and all the other Muslim race comes from Ishmael, the unwanted child by God. But God had mercy not to kill him. So that's where all this evil, wicked bloodline comes from Ishmael. Okay, but Israel belongs to the Jewish people. The Jewish people are the chosen people by God, and the land of Israel is the land of God for the Jewish people, okay? But we Gentiles love Jesus, that we are God's favorite also. But not all the Jewish will live at the end. The book of Ezekiel explained that Israel were going to be like a pool of blood, knee-deep. It's going to be bloodshed in the streets in Israel. Only the ones that choose Jesus Christ will live, and God is going to make a path for them to go to the mountains to be saved, and the rest will die. So, and right now, if you say the word of Jesus in Israel, you will go to prison. So I think Israel, as much as I stand with Israel as a Christian woman, because that's where Jesus came from, what's happening is that all these Jewish people are hating Jesus right now. And I think the country is being cursed by God. That's my opinion, of course, about the curse. Because before people went in missions, there was a lot of people all the time from so many churches. Pastor Hagee, I think, he's the one that went with President Trump to help him move the embassy, praying, and they allow prayers. They announce it, Jesus Christ and all that, and now it's a forbidden word. So Israel is being tested by the Lord. So, but the Palestinians come from Ishmael, and they don't have no say-so in none of the land in Israel ever. The Jewish fled because there was a lot. They went all over the world, but then they came back because they will come back, you know, to their land eventually. Not all of them, but not all of them will live, because if they don't accept Jesus, they're doomed. So that's where I stand. But a lot of this, Greg, I heard one of the programs I was watching that there was going to be huge protests against Benjamin Netanyahu, and all of a sudden nobody's talking about the huge protest that it was going to happen against him. So he's playing a role. India and many countries warned Israel about the attack, and they ignore it. They didn't want to know about it. So Israel,
well, we got an article on stand down
exactly
orders. So I want to give Pianki a chance to talk on this, but I have an article to talk about after Pianki on stand down on were there stand down orders so the attack would happen. Let's talk about that in a little bit, Pianki. But let me give you a chance to really explain your position on this.
Yeah, a lot of Black Americans in the United States support Hamas.
Can you tell me more? Because I know you had a lot of disagreements with what's going on, and because I've seen your posts on all our pages. So let's talk about Israel for a minute.
Well, yeah, they support Hamas. You heard what Mandela said. Mandela said that land belongs to Palestine, the Palestinians. So, you had Helen Thomas, you had Golda Meir, says she's Palestinian. But in the United
States, before 1948, that was
because
the land was called Palestine. It was a region in those days, but it wasn't a country. And she had a Palestinian passport. It was interesting because there was no Israel yet. But you changed your position too
because you said there was never no Palestine on the map. But what I'm saying is this: Black Americans support, a lot of Black Americans support Hamas and Palestine.
Why?
Really.
Why is that?
Well, because I guess it's in their DNA.
No, it's not.
They don't know any better.
From that region.
They just,
yeah.
No, they do know better. I know. No, that's not true. Don't say that Blacks don't know any better. That's racist.
No, they don't know because no.
Well, you got Blacks from that area that do know.
One at a time, folks. One at a time.
Yeah,
ask
you got
first.
Blacks in that area, from that area. So you going to say Mandela don't know?
Well, look, the black people love Mandela, but Mandela was a criminal that he went to prison for 27-something years because he was killing innocent women at malls and little children, African children and women. And if you tell somebody that story, they don't believe you. Say, oh, no, I love Mandela. No,
well,
no.
People,
no, maybe
people
he changed
tell stories
at the
like
end
the Noah
in prison.
Story. Yeah, people tell stories like mm-hmm. the Noah story. You can't prove it. But what I'm saying is those people on that continent,
right.
you know, they wanted to go to Uganda. And if they had went to Uganda doing the things they doing, I would have been over there fighting them. But could you imagine a bunch of white men coming in Uganda talking about, I'm back?
That's kind of funny, actually. That's a good example. No, I agree. And I was surprised. I got to hear that the tape again. So Pianki posted on the Action Radio group a tape of Golda Meir saying she had a Palestinian passport, which, as I understand, would be impossible. I mean, I'm trying to change my position. I'm trying to understand why she would have said that, given that, you know, because if she lived in that region, yeah, but it was never been officially a country. It's never been recognized as a country. It
well,
was part of the Ottoman Empire.
Yeah.
So here's the – but
you
Israel
know
wasn't
–
hold on just a second. Israel wasn't officially created until 1948, so she couldn't have had an Israeli passport because there was no Israel yet. So that makes sense that she had to have some kind of passport because she lived in the land that was called – you know, that region of land was called Palestine. But, you know, we know what this history has changed, and it's a mess. I mean, it's a messy history. We've been
you
over
know,
this for several days.
Too,
go ahead, Pianki.
When they aired up as Ethiopian women, Beta Israel from mm-hmm. Gondor, they made the black women, they sterilized them and made them take birth control, and they recircumcised the male. That's a heinous thing to do. So what
mm-hmm.
they're trying to do is trying to prevent the multiplication of blacks in Israel.
Well, many blacks
because
live in
white
Israel?
Women don't have babies, and those European women anyway.
So Israel is a combination of, I know it's got, is part Arab, it's part white, you know, and so it's, but how much of Israel, how many black residents of Israel, just before, I mean, you probably don't even know, but you have to guess.
You got a whole community in Dimona that came from America, and Israel refused
mm-hmm.
to recognize. Matter of fact, it just recently in time
recognized.
So if you got
as
blacks
Israeli?
That came back, they left Chicago in the 1970s, Ben Carter, and they have formed a productive, self-sustaining community in Dimona. But the white Israeli government refused to reckon. So that tells you something. That's
wait,
why come you got blacks
exploring.
Here in the United States that support Palestine.
Huh. Okay, so that, are we talking about now? Was this a region within Israel? Was it a city? Did they want a separate designation, or were these black Americans who wanted to become Israeli citizens?
No, they didn't want to become Israeli citizens. They say that they have more claim to the land than the whites from Poland, Germany, and
so this wasn't a white
America.
This wasn't a white issue. This was a national issue. This is an issue of Israel.
Yes, it is a white issue.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's where you and I have to. That's where you and I part. Great, because
you
just don't know the history. There's nothing wrong with it.
Oh,
I mean,
don't know the history. All right. We don't disagree often,
you
but,
just
think,
been
but every, when we do it. Yeah. Okay. All right. So like I say, obviously I need to learn more. I'm not
and
an
that's
expert
what
on
arguments
history.
Down in Florida today. Blacks want their history told.
Okay. No. Listen, I don't have a problem with that. But I see. You know me. I have to ask questions. So the question is, you know, if I was in Israel, I see this more as a national issue. But if it'd be like the United States, if a bunch of Somalis wanted to live in Minneapolis and call it Little Mogadishu, I'd say, what, are you crazy? No, you're part of the United States. You live by U.S. law. Or like Dearborn, Michigan, which has become a virtual Muslim community, or anybody that wanted to practice Sharia law or these no-go zones. I would never that kind of thing. America is America. It's free and open to everybody. So I would no more recognize a Somali area or a Muslim area in my country, and I wouldn't expect Israel to recognize a black
Louis,
area
the
in their country. Beg pardon?
In St. Louis, they got the hill, which is Italian. And when times come to sell a house, they don't put a sign on the yard. It's
right.
by word of mouth.
Which is legal.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. Well, is the black community
yeah,
the same thing? I wouldn't
but
care.
But you got to look at what they don't want blacks in the area.
Well, let's take Harlem. Let's take another example. So how many times do Harlem apartments come up for rent where white people might go, hey, I want to live in Harlem. This would be great. You know, does that happen often?
I don't know. I haven't been to Harlem.
Yeah, okay, just lately. Curious.
But I'm just telling you what goes on there. Then you got to ask, why did Israel give the white Rhodesian South African apartheid government nukes?
Oh, good question.
Them on Russia?
So Rhodesia.
So
let's talk about Rhodesia. Rhodesia.
You have
that evil
exists there.
Yeah, I agree.
Now,
so Rhodesia.
Menachem Begin tried to claim that Jews built. He said, "Nope, you might have built bagels, but you didn't build these pyramids."
Well, Jews did not build the pyramids. Okay, the Jews left. The Egyptians built the pyramids. That one at least I do know. But that's interesting. You know,
when did they leave comparison? When the pyramids? I don't want to take up Josie's time, but when did they leave compared to when the pyramids were built?
Okay, go ahead, Josie. Let's get you. We got Robin on the line. I'll bring her on in a bit. See if she wants
to
engage.
Go ahead, Josie. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on the subject of Biden that wants to send $100 billion for Israel, Taiwan, and Ukraine. You know, it is ridiculous. We have so many homeless in our street, real Americans, being dumped from their apartments, from hotels, into the streets. There is a black gentleman that I know that goes to Olive Church. He's closer to 80 and very ill from both vaccines. He didn't take the booster because I begged him not to. And he did become a Republican because I talked to him, and after 70-something years, he's been voting Democrat until he voted for Trump, thank God. But anyway, he's very ill, and now he's all – it's like a Section 8 building over here in Johnson to get all the folks out. They're telling them they have to leave. And you know what? It's pretty sad because this is real Americans we're talking about. And meanwhile, we want to send $100 billion with a B to all these countries that they're not Americans. And we should not be protecting their borders. And that's what they're saying. Oh, we need to protect the borders of these countries and all that. What about my border? What about my country? And, you know, it is out of control, this corrupt, communist, Democrats, evil people running the show right now. We have to stop them. Say, no, we're not sending that money. Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel.
Well, that's one of the benefits of
every year from our tax dollars. Every year. And you know, my church, I didn't go to church Sunday because I have my event, but our pastor was asking, how can we help Israel and all that? I said, I'm not sending money to Israel. I'm sorry. I'm not. They already get billions of dollars of my sweat every year. Why should I send more money? They have so much money, so much weapons, so much technology.
They don't need weapons. They don't need money.
Medical technology.
Israel's got this.
Out of this world.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. Yeah.
Yeah.
We did a show. If you check Jessica Rivera's report first thing yesterday, she talked for about half an hour about Egypt and Jordan specifically not taking Palestinians. And that's a problem. They should.
Yes.
So if Egypt and Jordan isn't, and half of Jordan's Palestinian anyway. Why, you know, why aren't they? Let me ask Robin, who's in our next hour. Hey, this is Robin Tout, who we're going to talk about breast implants and the dangers thereof in the next hour. Robin, do you want to get in? You've been listening for a few minutes. You want to get in on this?
You know what? I've just been catching up, so I didn't hear the first parts of the conversation.
Okay, we'll just hang in there. We'll get to you in a bit then. Just I'll leave your line live, muted if you want to. But yeah, if you want to join the conversation, feel free. Go ahead, Bianchi.
You know, in the Bible, Canaan was black, right?
I don't know that, but I'll take your word for it.
That's what Canaan, the son of Ham. The son of Ham
was
black.
Okay.
Canaan, the land, was black. So how did it turn white? Now, let me give you some reinforcement on that.
Mm-hmm.
Mormons wouldn't allow blacks in their organization because of why? Because they said they was cursed.
Really? That's stupid.
Well,
the son of Noah,
Ham, was black. That's where the race black comes from Ham.
Well, I know. So, and his son Cana when his sons looked upon his nakedness, he cursed Cana. Mm-hmm. So the country of Canaan, which is next to Egypt, was black. So how all of a sudden they turned white?
I don't know.
I don't think Arabs are classified. Arabs aren't classified
isn't
as white.
That's one another thing that NASA said. You left here black, now you come back white. The president.
Wait, no, this is why I want you to.
Commercial?
Bianca, this is why I want you to do an ancient history hour. I mean, you really should do an ancient history report. You know this stuff better than anybody. You know, I'd love to give you an hour, especially on Thursdays. Let's start going over some of these ancient societies. So the Middle East, as far as I know, from black to Arab, you know, it's an interesting transition.
There was no whites in that area during that time.
Jesus wasn't
still
white.
Still elsewhere.
Yeah, Jesus wasn't white. What was Jesus? Jesus wasn't white. Jesus was Arabic.
And what story?
He was olive skin. He was not white.
In which story?
I don't know. I'm going to say I'm not.
If
I'm
you
not,
grew
the,
up in
I'm
that area, you
wouldn't
have been no olive skin. Yeah. So it depends on what story you look at. But what I'm saying is that you're looking at a big bamboozlement. But that's all right. Okay. We have bamboozlement, like you said, the deep state in Congress with the Republicans.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Yeah. I'll make this one more point, then I'll get to Robin. But the fascinating thing is that the reason that $100 billion of our tax money is not being wasted in Ukraine, Israel, and everywhere else is because the House doesn't have a speaker. So this is actually a good thing. Maybe we're safer
thing.
If they don't.
You know another thing, too? If we switch it over to EV, we don't need oil anyway. So stop giving money to Israel. What do you need oil for? Well, you're gonna switch. Everybody's going to switch over to EV.
No, we're not. Well, that's another discussion.
Hey, Greg.
Jesse, notices, websites, your store. Let's get some information, and then we'll. I want to talk to Robin.
Just quickly. Uh-huh. Just quickly. I believe. I'm not sure on this one. I heard some women talking that the reason they're not choosing a speaker of the House right now is because they're playing this little game back and forth. Because you have to have the Senate, a full Senate, in order for us to declare war to go to Israel to fight. So I don't know what's going on, and also about the money.
No, we're not going to declare war. Who are we going to declare war on? Hamas? That would be insane.
Go over there, you know, with our military.
No, you don't have to. You know, they can fund military operations without. That's a whole other question. So where does a military operation end and a war begin? Yeah. So let's get your plugs. Let's do your shameless plug, and then
This is Josie reporting for Action Radio. Please keep us on the air. Donate, even if it's $10, $15 a month. And I'm in Pensacola, Florida. See you next week. God bless you.
And your store? Let's hear the store. Go ahead.
No, it's okay.
Okay, fine. Thanks, Josie.
I'm on Olive Road. God bless you. Bye-bye.
There you go. And so for those, we do have two contribution sites, of Venmo and a PayPal. And I am raising money for our January 7th Citizen Legislation Day, which Robin doesn't even know about. I'm about to tell her. But let's take a quick second here, and we'll be right back.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
And I want to introduce Robin Tout again. She's been on the show before, but let's give her a round of applause anyway. Hey, darling, welcome back.
Thank you, Greg. Nice to be here.
Yeah, well, now we're going to talk in your ballpark. So let's reintroduce you again, the group you're working with, and let's get folks, and then you can tell me all the latest news of what's happening in the world of breast implant recovery. I guess, is there a word for that? I guess, you know, that's the first thing that I thought of. But
I mean,
yeah.
It's an ongoing thing. Yeah. So.
Right, yeah.
Whatever we want to call it, it's just a constant problem.
Well, I'm good at words. I'm good at names. You got to name something. I like that, breast implant recovery. Bra. Isn't that interesting? No, breast, B-I-A. No, we need to understand that. We need a BRA acronym. We'll work on that. Breast Recovery Association, BRA.
Awareness.
Awareness, Breast Recovery Awareness. There you go. This is your BRA acronym. You can use that. That's kind of funny.
Exactly.
So, who are you? Welcome back. Tell the folks who you are.
Thanks. So I'm Robin Tout, and I am a 3-time cancer survivor and most recently a breast cancer survivor in 2017. And I was harmed by breast implants that were used in my reconstruction after having a double mastectomy. And it was kind of a long but short journey in that it completely wrecked my health. I didn't do any treatment for my cancer. I only had surgery, so I couldn't understand why I felt so sick, because most breast cancer patients that feel sick, it's due to chemotherapy or radiation treatments, and I didn't have it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I figured it out pretty quickly because, you know, it was kind of process of elimination, and had joined some support groups and found out that breast implants have been harming women, making them sick and causing cancers for over 60 years. So I immediately had them removed as soon as I possibly could. So I only actually had them for 4 months. And when I woke up from that surgery, I could breathe again. I had energy again. 24 symptoms disappeared within the first 48 hours.
Wow.
It was insane and very shocking to me, but definitely a wake-up call that these things are, you know, making women sick. It is real. It is harsh. And something needs to be done about it. So I chose to become
you're on the right show.
Advocate.
You're on the right show for that. Yeah. That's what we do here.
Something
needs
to be done. Yeah. Yep. And, you know, honestly, my advocacy has taken a lot of different twists and turns. But I would say a lot of times the things that I do are fueled by my anger that this happened to me. And just the feeling of betrayal by an entire team of doctors that isn't letting patients know, not giving proper informed consent.
Gee, where have we heard this before?
I thought, you know.
This is like COVID all over again, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's literally the underlying theme of the medical community now is just no one's given proper informed consent. So I decided that, you know, it happened to me, and I know how horrible that felt. I know how betrayed I felt, and I just wanted to make sure it doesn't happen to other women. So I actually passed a state law here in Arizona where I live for proper informed consent for breast implant surgery, which not only includes...
We're going to give you another round of applause for that. Nice
I love
job.
That. Mm-hmm. It includes the manufacturer information about the risks and benefits of having breast implants, but it also includes a patient decision checklist that I created to better inform patients in layman's terms so that they can understand what truly can happen, you know, and look out for the signs and symptoms of being sick from your breast implants. So I passed that law. It went into effect January 1st, 2022, and we're currently working on the same legislation in several other states. But I think because I succeeded in that first law, you know, I was put on their radar, and now they're trying to block my legislation in the states that I'm working in. So that's what I'm up against. That's me in a nutshell. That's what I do and why I'm here. And even if one listener that you have didn't know about this, you know, we could save a life just by talking about it today.
Yeah, I've invited a couple of women health professionals, doctors, to come join us. So we might get some call-ins here as well. I'm going to put you in what I call the Do Something. Yeah, I'm going to put you in what I call the Do Something Club. There's a group of us that are actually doing things. You know, Pianchi's written a couple of bills. We have a friend of mine, Laura Bartlett, with ourpatientrights.com. Do you guys know each other? Because she does a whole contract before going to the hospital. So she's big on informed consent as well.
I don't think I know her. You'll have to connect her.
Okay, let me get you guys connected. Also, how about Rebecca Hardy, that does Texans for Vaccine Voice? You're similar kind of thing there. I can get all you folks connected.
Yeah, for sure.
It's all part of my Do Something Club. Yeah.
Start a group chat and we can divide and conquer.
Okay. Well, just here's what I'm hoping. If you can come out, January 7th, we're having Citizen Legislation Day. First of its kind in the world, where we're going to showcase legislation written by regular folks. And I'd love to have your bill. And you talk about it there. This would be a good thing to do. We're trying to get some major media. I've got one friend of mine is going to do social media, so that can be shared worldwide. We're going to have full coverage. We've got Judy Mikovits is coming out, Dr. Judy Mikovits, who is she's a real friend. She's a friend of mine. She's like, we're really good friends now. But she is the only person at every public appearance talking about our vaccine product liability bill. So she's, you know, huge in the Do Something Club. Yeah, so the Do Something Club is the opposite of what we call raising complaining to an art form. So all of the conventions that are out there, all of the events, all the speeches, all the stuff, all the talk shows, all the podcasts, none of doing anything. You're doing something. You've actually passed legislation, okay? Without our help, by the way. So I just want to let you know, Robin did this on her own, okay? So this is completely independent. We're not the only way to do this, you know, but I hopefully will be a conduit for folks. In fact, I'd love to see your bill. Send me your bill. I want to post it as a model. On our vaccine page, and I want to see how you did it, because we actually had a breast implant bill that we worked on when we had the group. Remember the group? I think Ann wrote it.
Yep.
Was that a model for what you did, or did you do something independent of that? I'm just curious.
We actually took my bill from Arizona and kind of modeled the Florida one after that. So yeah.
Okay.
It was kind of just another trajectory we were going, but it's interesting too, because if anyone's listening, to be 100% honest, I knew nothing about how to pass legislation, how to write a bill.
Mm-hmm.
I knew absolutely nothing. And it just, I want people to know that if I can do it, anybody can do it. I just literally had a friend who went to school, high school, with one of our state senators. And we were talking one day, this friend was also harmed by breast implants. And she's like, you know, I know this senator. I'm like, I said, could you get me a meeting with her? Let's get together and go to coffee.
Oh, her. That makes a difference. Was that more important that it was a woman legislator for this issue?
You know, at first I thought it did make a difference. And I thought maybe that's why we were successful. But I'll be honest with you, there's some very amazing men in this space that have helped us and that are continuing to help us. So I'm very happy to talk about that as well.
Sure.
So we had this meeting, you know, we sat down for coffee. And again, like I said, I knew nothing. I didn't even know if this was in the jurisdiction of what we could do at a state level, or even if you could pass a law like this. So I basically just shared my story with her, told her I was pissed off about this and I wanted to do something. And I wanted to make sure that this didn't happen to anybody else. So she said, okay, let me see what we can do. Let's set up a meeting with the health committee. So she got us a meeting with the health committee, and I don't think the entire committee was there, but the senators that were there from the health committee were all women. And, you know, there were three of us that went down to the state capitol. We showed up. We sat in this conference room. We brought our implants with us because I had them removed from
your
my
actual
body,
ones?
And I have them.
You still have your actual – oh, my goodness. Where do you keep them?
Oh, yeah. So it was,
where do you keep them?
I keep them in an insulated. Where do you keep your boobs? I keep them in an insulated bag in a cool closet in the center of my house. So
right. I'm just curious.
And I actually have multiple sets. I have
really.
So I've had friends and the patients give me theirs because they don't want them for whatever reason. And I use
You've got
them
to showcase
for presentations.
This.
I use.
We
them.
Need pictures.
I do.
No,
yeah.
We need a video.
Well,
yeah.
It's so funny.
Does this
I
make
just
you
did
a
an
person?
Event last weekend.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. I did an event last weekend, a golf tournament in LA, and it was a charity event to raise awareness and raise funding for to help breast implant illness women to not only afford their explant surgery, but the health complications, you know, and seeing like a functional medicine practitioner to help them kind of detox and go through, you know, getting healthy again after being harmed by breast implants. And at the end of the tournament, one of the guys that had come through, I had a little table set up on one of the holes and a couple other girls, you know, were working the table with me and we were just kind of raising awareness and giving information. And I get a text from the girl, Ashley, who's amazing. And she said, hey, the people on hole 3 are looking for an implant. They want to tee off with it. And I'm like, let's go. What? I'll give them the one that was in my body. So we get in a car, we drive over there. And this guy's waiting on the tee box, and he sets up 4 golf tees, puts my implant on the top of the tees, and just rocked it. And do you know that thing just exploded? It just totally
Is this
blew
on video?
The smithereens. It is. It's on my, I posted it on Instagram and Facebook.
Oh,
and
oh, you got to send it to me.
It was
put it in our Action Radio video. We have an Action Radio video page. I want that. I want to see this. In fact, anything you do, feel free.
Will
yeah.
Love
just,
it.
Oh yeah, this is hysterical.
I even did like a boomerang video where I slowed it down in slow motion and went forward, backward, forward, so you could really see the silicone just bursting out of it, which
oh
is
goodness.
Interesting.
You mean a boomerang?
On a more serious note, because
called a boomerang.
A boomerang. We have plastic surgeons
uh-huh.
that try to make a point on how safe breast implants are, and they're indestructible, and you mm-hmm. know they run over them with their Ferrari and their Lamborghini. Mm. And they step on them with stiletto heels. And so on a serious note, like we have surgeons that are trying to prove this. And here I have a guy whack it with a golf club and it just explodes. So think of that being in a woman's chest. You know,
right.
think of being in a car accident. What's going to
yeah.
happen if you're in a car accident and your chest hits the steering wheel? That's going to explode inside you. It was disgusting, Greg. And mm-hmm. I went over and picked it up. I'm not good with like the yardage. It probably went maybe 15 yards.
You
so I
measure
go over
it?
And I pick it up by the top. And there's a golf tee stuck inside the goo. It's
oh.
the most classic picture. It's beautiful.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'll
I
send you the
video
and the pictures. It's pretty
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
Well, you're doing great work. I mean, this stuff is amazing. But this is, you know, the myth. Notice you said Ferraris and Lamborghinis. Plastic surgeons make money at this, don't they? They're not driving over it with a 64 bug. You know, they're driving over with a Lamborghini or a Ferrari.
Sentra. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Exactly. Yeah, so and that's the thing too. If you really look at the industry itself as a whole, you know, there's a lot of money in breast implants, billions and billions of dollars flowing through their pockets. So it makes sense that yeah, they are trying to stop my legislation. They're trying to roadblock everything I'm trying to do to protect patients, and it really is disheartening, you know, to see the length they will go to. Keep
Don't
this
be discouraged.
Little secret hidden.
Yeah. You know, this is long haul fight, okay? And I always try and tell folks this, especially if you're new to politics. I've been doing politics since I was 10 years old, probably. So I'm kind of an old hand at this. And the one thing you need is an outlet, you know, so you don't go crazy. I play rock and roll guitar. I've got several videos out now of me jamming along to famous bands. But you got to have an outlet. You got to think of this as long term. Accept the victories. Mm-hmm. Don't. You're not going to win. You know, you're not going to win the war. You're not going to get a surrender. You're not going to get unconditional surrender. This isn't, you know, World War II. You know, you're not going to get that. Okay. But what you are going to get are little victories along the way. And you're going to get a lot of people to join you. And
mm-hmm.
you're going to change lives. And you're going to impact people in ways that you have no idea about. I mean, I know I do that here. I don't know all the ways that we touch people's lives, but I know we do because I got listeners around the world.
Absolutely.
Not a whole lot yet, but we're working on
yeah.
it. You know, but why is that? Why is freedom such a popular concept in so much of the world? We have listeners in Cuba, in Vietnam, in China, and in Russia.
Wow.
You know, we've got listeners in communists. We used to have Iran, but obviously they had enough of us, you know, for obvious reasons. But you know, these people are, and there's who knows who's listening on a secret VPN or whatever those things are called. We don't know. I mean, I've got 20
yeah.
podcasts. I don't know who's listening. I know they're listening because
exactly.
freedom works. People want freedom. And they also want information. Information is freedom. So the parallels with what you're doing and with COVID are so incredible, but it also goes back to AIDS. Dr. Fascius, you know who I mean, right? We
mm-hmm.
talk about him all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Josie
yep.
appreciates this. Yeah, I give him a full title. Dr. Fascius is the genocidal, psychopathic, avaricious, narcissistic, pathologically lying vaccine drug pusher. That's his title, okay?
That's a
mouthful. That's it. That's who he is. It took a while to learn how to say that. Just as it took a while, I actually made a commercial for Pianchi. I might play for in a silly mood later. Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream, the first black shaving cream. That's one of my little parodies. So,
oh, gosh.
Now that I haven't played this for a while, Pianchi. Well, I've muted him. Well, I'm going to play it anyway. No, I'll save it for later. But we do some pretty silly things here. But humor is another way out of this. So you know the
mm-hmm.
boomerang, you know, little things like that.
Yeah.
And you want to make fun. Yeah, but write that down. You know, but you want to humiliate these people. You want to make fun of them. You want to, we were talking earlier about the Philippine Navy versus China. Chinese ships, which are bigger and more powerful and bigger guns, are bumping into Philippine Navy ships trying to resupply their military outposts in what they're calling the South China Sea. So one of my recommendations for the Philippines is they start calling it the North Philippine Sea, just to piss off the Chinese. You know, I recommend
mm-hmm.
that whatever force they have, they take, you know, manure from farms and just dump it on the Chinese ships as they fly by. You know, stupid things like that. Humiliate them. Embarrass them.
Yeah.
Make them look stupid. But don't shoot them because
they'll
sink your ship.
They're doing a really good job of humiliating themselves, which is even more comical because
tell me.
I don't have to do it. Yeah. So
video.
One of my favorite, it's not necessarily a video, but one of my favorite is there's a group of plastic surgeons who have been kind of controlling the narrative of all things breast implant related for just about 30 years now. So they're in it to win it. They're in it for the long haul. And I have discovered kind of their MO just by going back in history and reading FDA transcripts from the early 2000s and literally reading every word of their testimony on how and why breast implants are safe and how women need choices, which just to remind everyone, I am a breast cancer survivor. So I have no breasts because the breasts they tried to give me poisoned me, gave me no quality of life. So I chose to have them removed and stay flat. So, you know, they always preach about women having choices and all that, which is great. I agree. Women should have choices, but they should be safe choices and they should be informed choices, educated and informed choices. And that's not happening. So it was awesome. I attended one of my first plastic surgery conferences back in 2019. And I actually met a group of these people who at the time I didn't know exactly who they were. And they were so excited to brag about this $250,000 grant they got to do a study on breast implant safety and breast implant illness. So, and they were females. And so I'm thinking, this is awesome. Girl power, right? Like these women are going to help these our sick women. Wow. Can I just tell you after 5 years now of watching how they work and what they do and the things they do behind the scenes, it is frightening that this group of women is literally assaulting women medically and hiding it and covering it up. And so they did this study, and this is one of my favorite stories to tell. And it was like a 2-year-long study. They came out with their results, and they were basically saying, it's interesting because their study actually showed when women remove their breast implants, 85 to 90% of the women feel better afterwards, even if they didn't think they were sick. Like I clearly had what we call breast implant illness. I knew I was sick. My hair was falling out. I had heart palpitations, daily migraines. I had a rash all over my body. I was so fatigued, chronic pain and muscle and joint pain. I had insomnia. Like I was a mess. And even the women that didn't have all those symptoms after they removed their implants said they felt better. They felt healthier. They felt that they had more energy, more vibrance. So I thought that part of their study was interesting. And then they started pushing this narrative that, you know, when we have a foreign object in our body builds a scar tissue capsule around it. And breast implants are full of toxic chemicals. Those toxic chemicals leach into the body. Our body forms a capsule to protect ourselves from those chemicals. And so these women were actually suggesting that remove the implants, but don't remove the capsules, even though they're laden with these toxic chemicals that cause cancer, by the way, multiple cancers. And so they not only were pushing this narrative, they're leaders in their aesthetic society of plastic surgeons and their research society. So they sent out a presidential joint memo stating that surgeons should not remove these toxic chemical laden capsules. And the
liability
best part about it, and you know, everybody
thought.
in the patient community was livid about it. You know, we're like, how does that make sense? I mean, that's literally like taking out your kitchen garbage but leaving the disgusting liner, you know, in there for months, years. No, you take the whole bag and you throw it in the trash, right?
So
they were so adamant that this is how medicine should be practiced. This is how surgery should be performed. And 1 month later, the FDA came out with an announcement that multiple cancers grow in those capsules. And man, did it
Gee,
make
what a
them
surprise.
Stupid. I mean,
well,
it
this
literally blew their study out of the water.
Yeah, no, this is this is for liability. They came up with the result, this result, because they knew the cancers were in the capsule. They knew all the problems in the capsule. This is why Big Pharma, you know, paid billions of dollars not to be liable for all the deaths and injuries that are caused by the vaccine shots, which aren't even vaccine shots anymore. That's where the evidence was. That's why they had to make sure that it was that was their liability. So this really ultimately comes down to money. But let me ask you another question. Did you think that women would be any less corrupt than men, that power would affect women any less, that money would affect women any less? I remember when people used to, they were saying, we need more women in Congress because they'll be nurturing. They'll be compassionate. Well, look at Nancy Pelosi. You know, I mean, I give AOC. I can point to a bunch of women. The compassion is not the first thing that comes to mind. Nurturing is not the first thing that comes to mind. Money, power. Mm-hmm. I think money and power is an equal opportunity employer. I don't see. Were you surprised by that? And what do you think now?
Well, I was surprised by that because when we had that initial meeting with them in person, you know, I literally sat across the table from them as a breast cancer survivor, and they know exactly how to word and say everything to make you feel like they're on your side and we're here for
they
you.
They practice
we're
that, by the way.
To the bottom of this.
They practice
and
that.
So they said all the right things. And I believed them because they seemed sincere. And I'm like, well, that's cool. And, you know, I mean, it's not about sex or gender. I was just like, hey, how cool would it be if a group of us women really got to the bottom of this? So I was proud and honored to be there. But, yeah, I was shocked when I found out what they do behind the scenes. I've actually watched their presentations that they give for continuing medical education. So, you know, any doctor or nurse has to go and take a certain amount of hours of CME classes to keep their license active. And
CME.
CME classes, yeah, continuing medical education.
Okay.
And, you know, most, like I used to be a teacher, and we used to have to take extra classes to keep our teaching certificate, you know, valid and enacted. So, you know, most industries like this are that way. And so I have actually signed up to watch some of their CME classes that they present about breast implants. And it's honestly comical at this point because to watch them in one platform and then see them switch over to another, it's Dr. Mm-hmm. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Whatever their audience is, they will say exactly the right words so that people believe them. So it sounds like, oh, yeah, they're on the patient side. Look what a great job they're doing, caring so much about their patients. And they don't care about their patients. They care about their profits, their bottom line. They care about their cash cow, which is breast implants. And they care about their money and their power and them controlling the narrative, which they have for 30 years. So it is so interesting to watch these women and how they behave. And I'll be honest with you, I'm completely transparent. I am not everyone's cup of tea. I know that. I know I can be a bit
edgy. On the show.
That's just who I am.
I want
I'm an
blunt.
Open book, and this is
yeah,
who
I
am.
Blunt and honesty. Yeah, so, that's why you're here.
Yeah, and behind
you know,
closed doors,
there's no shrinking violets. There's no shrinking violets on Action Radio. People that are shy and quiet, you're not going to get on the show. I don't have time for that. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. No, so it is so interesting to watch the human behavior and just watch them bold-faced lie. And tell one thing, in depending on who their presentation is for, it's mind-blowing. It's actually unbelievable to watch, quite frankly.
No, it's very believable. So, I think this goes across every industry. What you need are whistleblowers. Are there any whistleblowers within the breast implant industry?
Yeah, and so we've connected with a lot of the whistleblowers, and unfortunately, because these people have positioned themselves in places of power and authority, a lot of the whistleblowers are afraid to come forward because they're afraid of the retaliation. You know, they're afraid to lose their medical license if they speak out.
Bring them on the show anonymously. I've done that before. They'll be, you know, Agent X. You know, I had this is like a year or two ago when COVID was huge. I had a lab technician come on the show as Lab Tech X, and that's how they identified themselves. You know, and because for exactly the same reason, they wanted to get information out that everybody needed to know, but they could not be identified. And so that's how I did it. So I'm happy to do that too. So we'll talk off the air. If you have someone that wants to come on to get the information out, even if or the other option is they just give it to you and you read it and say, this is from Agent X or this is from, you know, Breast X.
And I do a lot of that too. I am given a lot of information that's insider information that they don't necessarily want to come forth with themselves, but they hand it to me and I'm like, I'll blast this to the world. I don't care,
blast it here.
You know?
I mean, I want to have you on a regular basis. This is a huge issue, but it's not only about the breast implants, it's about the whole medical industry and that this has gone
on.
This is COVID, this is AIDS, this is cancer, this is all the things where this is antidepressant medication that doesn't work. You know, that's a whole other story. This stuff's all related. I want to ask you a question I don't think I've ever asked you. And I wrote down here boob psychology. That's kind of like my short, I take a little short forms here, but there's a lot of the reasons for this is psychological, that women, that the medical industry feels that women without breasts or even a certain size are somehow inadequate, are somehow not, you know, live their full life. There's a lot of psychology that goes into this. I mean, is there any medical reason for a breast implant at all? Especially if you had cancer and had
not
it removed for
a
reason?
There is no one on this planet who needs a breast implant. Nobody needs a breast implant. Nobody will die without a breast implant. And that's what's so mind-boggling to me because, you know, I have a friend that she puts forth an amazing presentation about basically all of the science behind breast implants. And she does it every other year. It's called the Breast Implant Health Summit. And in looking at some of the things, you know, regarding breast implants, we actually took the manufacturer's core studies and made a chart of their complication rates. And you know what? I'll pull it up right here on my phone.
Yeah, go ahead. Take your time. I can always take a break for a bit and play something.
And I'll send it to you too. Now I've got it right here. So listen to these complication rates. These are breast implant adverse event reports of complications. And this came directly from the manufacturer. Okay. So let's just take rupture and leaking. Okay.
Especially on a golf course.
Are
I'm sorry.
16.5% of their implants will rupture or leak. The ones I had, Mentor Memory Gel, 43.9%. Mentor Memory Shape, 18.9%. Allergan, 35%. So you take these, and the overall complication rates are 44%, 50%, 67%, 57%. You tell me something, Greg. If you were getting a pacemaker, or you were buying a brand new car, and the car dealer told you this car has a 57% rate of complications, are you going to buy it? Are you going to shell out $50,000 for a piece of crap? No,
especially if I don't need it. Especially if there's no reason for it.
Especially
if I live in a city where walk and take the bus. Well, you know, yeah. But this is why I want to get back to the point. But this is why I asked that question. So medically, there's absolutely no reason for these. They don't do anything nutritionally. They don't do anything for exercise. They don't do anything for heart rate, respiration, blood flow, circulation, aerobic capacity. They don't do anything.
In fact, they do things for all those, but in a negative way.
Well, what I'm getting to is that so why would you want something that does nothing? There's only one reason. Psychology, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole psychology.
Yeah, they
convince
women that that's their womanhood.
Let's talk about that, because I think that's really the key to this issue. This may give you a whole avenue of ways to combat these people. So you had, you know, there was a time, you know, when you had breasts as your life, and then they were taken because you had cancer. Were you a different person? Did your life, you know, was it over? Were there things that you couldn't do? You know, was there any part of your life that was impacted in a way because you had your breasts removed that was impacted that all of a sudden you couldn't do something?
Not a single thing. I mean, I did have what we call immediate reconstruction. So after my breasts were removed in the same surgery, I had already started the reconstruction process. They put these horribly painful tissue expanders underneath the skin. No, there was nothing, and I tell women this all the time, especially breast cancer women, because, you know, when breast cancer women have a complication with their implants and they take them out, you know, most times they will stay flat, or they can choose to do a different type of reconstruction, which is very invasive. It has multiple incision sites. It's a very long and tedious recovery. So when I'm counseling women on, you know, who are you, with or without these breast implants. You know, I had a woman that was struggling so much about her husband and would he find her attractive. And, you know, this is about the woman. This is about the woman's health. And this is about the woman and who she is. And I told her, I counseled her and said, when you get out of the shower and you look in the mirror, you're going to see your scars. Yeah, you're going to see some ugly scars. But, you know, that's part of your story. That's part of what you went through to be a survivor and all this. But what you need to do when you look in the mirror is you need to look at who else are you? Who else do you see in that mirror? Because it can't just be about your scars. Because you are a mother. You are a grandmother. You are a teacher. You are an artist. You are a sister and a loving neighbor and a volunteer. I mean, we are so many other things that define us. for our family members and our friends and the reasons why they love us. And it has nothing to do with our breasts. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sure there's a handful of guys out there that is the most important thing, but they're not worth their soul anyway. So
they're Neanderthals.
Maybe find a new man.
The rest of us guys don't want to associate with them either because they're just, you know, yeah. But this is fascinating to me. So in other words, so women will do this so they will feel good, but it really is about the psychology of how women think other people think about them. And if they don't have breasts, all of a sudden they think that other people think they're somehow less of who they could be, right? This is really a weird psychology.
Well, and the doctors are part of that because they use terms like, we're going to make you whole again.
Ooh.
Well, if you're going to make me whole, that means that I'm broken somehow. I'm flawed somehow. Like I'm not a complete version of myself if I don't have breasts. They use things like, we're going to restore you to, you know, let me be perfectly clear. Breast implants and breast reconstruction after having a mastectomy, you're not restoring anything. They are not breasts. They are not real. They are not your body. Even if you do the natural tissue reconstruction, that is not what you were born with. So it's a facade. And they're using psychological terms to guilt you and trick you into thinking you need these. You need to have breasts. No, I don't. I don't need breasts. I can still go out and do every single thing that I did before having breast cancer. In fact, I do it with more ease because naturally when I was, you know, when I had natural breasts, they were really large. And I did have a difficult time exercising, forget running or jogging because they were so big, you know, double D. Yeah. So now that I have nothing, it's actually easier for me to exercise. My posture is better because I don't have that added weight. My neck and shoulder problems are not as harsh as they were when I had real breasts or the breast implants. So I actually have a better quality of life having no breasts than I did before having breast cancer. And all of those things that you mentioned, you know, asking, are there health benefits to having a breast implant? No, all those things that you mentioned, when we put breast implants in our body, it affects our body in a negative way when it has to do with breathing, cardiology, exercise, just your range of motion, pulmonary function. All of that is affected in a negative way with breast implants. Not to mention the 42 toxic chemicals and heavy metals that are leaching into the body through the breast implant shell. So, you know, when you really look at what breast implants are, it's unbelievable that they put these in women's bodies. I mean, some of the chemicals I can't even pronounce, but we have like dodecane and limonene.
That should give you a clue right there.
Arsenic.
Arsenic.
Chromium, cobalt, copper. Yep. Lead, magnesium, mercury, nickel, platinum, selenium, tin, titanium, zinc. I mean, all of these are heavy metals.
This is like an electric car battery.
Are found.
That's what you're describing. This is where they put in electric car batteries.
Yeah.
All those things.
Oh, acetone, which is a neurotoxin. Isopropanol. Yep. I mean, that's basically, it's so disturbing. And of course, I didn't know any of this when they put these in my body because I was not given proper informed consent about what is the ingredients that are in these implants. And that's really what my mission is just informed consent.
Do they come with an insert like vaccines that nobody ever reads? And the fact the COVID ones are blank because, you know, they're under their emergency use authorization. But do these things come with the equivalent of like a vaccine insert with all the disclaimers and health complications and side effects and things like that?
They do. There's a patient information brochure that you're supposed to get before you have surgery. And then now there's a warning on the box like cigarettes or vaccines that, you know, gives you a warning. But the problem is when you're asleep and you're under anesthesia on the operating table, you're not going to see the box that these came in. The doctors aren't giving you the box afterwards, and they're not giving the pamphlet that they're supposed to give you before, which I actually went back and read when the FDA approved these breast implants. In their pre-market approval agreement, it states that the manufacturers have to give one of these brochures to each patient. So in 2020, I did a survey, and I had over 5,000 women answer this survey. 86% of women never got that booklet. 86% never got the patient information booklet.
Well,
so
how many people got the booklet, and how many women got the booklet and then refused the surgery, refused the implants?
That's probably why they don't give the booklet. So here's an interesting study that was just done last year. They did a survey on women. I think there were only a couple hundred women. Don't quote me on the number, but maybe 250 women. And they asked them, they went in for breast augmentation consultations. And they said, do you want breast implants? Yes, I do. And here are the reasons why. Then they did a follow-up survey and said, we're going to tell you some things about breast implants because we want to know if you still want them afterwards. And then they told them about the chemicals. They told them about the cancers that are caused by breast implants. They told them about the autoimmune diseases that are caused by breast implants. And at the end of the survey, they said, do you still want to have breast implants? 75%, 78% of women said, no, I don't want them. Well, there you go.
What a surprise.
It's not rocket science.
Exactly.
Well, it's a business. If we're told the information and we know the truth, nobody's going to want breast implants if they know the truth.
So what you need to do, if you don't already have one, is an insert, the equivalent of an insert, and just publish it, get it out there, send it to people, you know, and I don't know, you know, just I want to get all the health folks together. This, if you can, come on out to our January 7th, because I'm sure you haven't met Dr. Judy Mikovits. She's brilliant. But some other folks might be here, too. This could be a really interesting health, you know, enclave, simply because so much of what we do at Action Radio is health legislation, particularly our vaccine product liability bill. So so if you can, come on up. But like I say, it's going to be on social media otherwise, and we'll be taking comments. I'm sure the comments on social media, I'll be reading them right off, you know, to the audience. We'll be going back and forth. There'll be a lot of interaction. And of course, I've never done this before, like everything else here. So we'll see how it works out. So what did you, let's get back to your bill for a second. What exactly did that bill do, the one that you got passed? And which state was it? It was Arizona first, right?
Arizona.
Okay. So what did this bill do? This was a disclosure liability. What was it?
It was an informed consent bill, and it basically mandates plastic surgeons in Arizona have to give that patient information brochure, even though the FDA already said that that brochure needs to be in patient's hands. The doctors aren't doing it. But by Arizona law now, the doctors have to do it, or they can get their medical license suspended or revoked. So I was, you know, frustrated and angry and felt betrayed because I didn't get that information. So I thought, this is going to be in my bill. We are going to make sure every patient has that information. So now they get the product.
Is it happening?
They do get it? It is happening. Oh, absolutely. Because I have women that are like, oh, I just got implants like 6 months ago. I'm like, show me all the paperwork the doctor gave you. And sure enough, they're giving it to them. You know, they don't want their license suspended. So unless they are forced to do the right thing, they're not going to do the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah, this is interesting. Now, what about the rate of breast implant surgery in Arizona because of this bill?
I haven't seen statistics on that. And it's interesting you bring up what are the rates of women having breast implants, because for the last 2 years, the plastic surgeon societies haven't posted their numbers. And I think it's because breast implants are so non-existent anymore. Nobody wants them. The truth is out. They can't put the can of worms back in, and nobody wants breast implants anymore. So they're doing damage control. Yeah, they're doing damage control. And so for the first time in 20 years, the plastic surgeon societies didn't post their statistic numbers for 2 years. And I thought that was so interesting. And I'm sitting here going, well, I know why, because breast aug has been the number one surgery for the last 30 years, ever since Pamela Anderson wore her little red swimsuit on, what was that show? Baywatch.
Baywatch.
Breast aug.
I think I was 12 when it came out, so of course I watched it.
Yeah.
You know, it's big for those 12-year-olds. 12-year-old young men. We was like, this is great. Wow. A show about, you know, hot chicks in L.A. on a beach. Yeah, I'm there.
Totally, right? Every kid had Pamela Anderson's poster in their bedroom. So
I didn't go that far.
For the last 30 years, the last 30 years, breast implants have been the rage, and now they're not. So for 2 years, they're probably like, what do we do now? How do we cover this up? How do we twist this scandal in our favor? And do you know what they did? This year, they posted their plastic surgery statistics from last year. And they're now saying the new trend is women actually want smaller breasts. So breast reductions have gone out the roof because it's just a new fashion trend, apparently. And I'm like, no, that's not it.
So bigger was better, and now smaller is better? Oh, this is hysterical. Yeah. It's all marketing, right?
Yeah, it's all marketing. Yeah. Oh, it's just a trend. People want. So here we have some smaller implants for you to make your breast perfect. No one's buying it. No one's buying your crap anymore. No one believes your story anymore. And nobody wants your toxic product.
Yeah.
That's the reality.
Do you think
so
COVID
it's funny to
helped
watch.
This?
Those are...
Did the whole COVID thing with the jab help this, or did it with the psychology that people are just distrusting, you know, the medical industry in general, or did breast implants help people get more skeptical of the COVID jab?
Oh, that's
is there
a good
interaction?
Point.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think the biggest factor has been social media.
Okay.
They never in a million years, and I will say this, American women and Americans in general on social media are so open about everything. They just diarrhea all their thoughts
blunt.
All over social media. I mean, they vomit everything they're thinking, you know, it doesn't matter. So, which I always thought was strange in a way, but when people aren't afraid to say what they're thinking, what they're feeling, people are literally, women are just telling their stories left and right. We're talking supermodels. We're talking Victoria's Secret models, swimsuit models, a breast cancer woman who went flat because her implants made her sick, and she's now a Victoria's Secret model modeling in New York Fashion Week every year. That is powerful. Yeah. So when you have such a powerful force on social media, they can't shut us up. They might be able to shut up Robin Tout, but they can't shut up the hundreds of thousands of other women that are out there screaming from the rooftop, I took my breast implants out and I feel better. Not only that, Greg, they're posting pictures of themselves, and literally their pictures with implants look, they look like a zombie. They look like a meth head. They look like they are so
I've seen, I think I've seen these. Yeah.
Door.
Yeah. They're all white and pasty and it's horrible. Yeah.
Oh,
well, and this is,
and
this is why
eyes and their hair is falling out.
Oh God, it's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this
and
is,
then they
but
the picture after they remove them and they look amazing and beautiful and 20 years younger. We call explant surgery the fountain of youth. Because
so
we just look
explain,
and feel 20 years younger.
Define what explant is, so because that's a word you used a couple of times. I know what it is, but I want everybody else to know.
So when you get implants, it's implant surgery. They implant the the breast implants into your body. And when you explant, they're taking them out. So think of exit, like an exit door.
Right.
And that's what explant surgery is, basically the removal of your breast implants. And the interesting thing is it is a very specific surgery that needs to be done the correct way in order to really optimize your healing and make sure you have the best shot at recovering. And that's where we get into the capsules, the scar tissue that I told you grows around the implant. Our body makes that tissue to protect our body from the toxic chemicals and the foreign object. So if you think of an orange, the fruit, right, it has the peel around it. That is what is the breast implant capsule. And then the fleshy part of the orange, which we eat, is the implant inside. So you want to make sure if you're getting your implants removed, you want not just the orange inside, you want the orange peel all the way around it so that we take all of it out together. We take that trash bag out with all the garbage inside. So there are a specific group of surgeons who are very skilled at doing this. They do, 10 to 20 of these surgeries a week. And there's a
That's
community
like
online that talks about
they talk
about these surgeons and how they're skilled at doing this. And so people will seek out those surgeons. And there's a surgeon in Florida who has a 2-year waiting list because he does it the right way.
You can't wait that long.
People
you can't do these things in 2 years. That's too dangerous.
Well, some women that
can you take the implant out?
Was,
yeah. Can you take the implant out and take the capsule out later? Or is that, should they
no,
do that at the same time?
Absolutely not.
All right.
That's a no-no.
Okay, gotcha.
So if you're going to if you're going to go under anesthesia and go through surgery, just do it the right way and do it the first time.
Yeah, well, I'll say something in a second here, too, but I'm just curious. Are doctors leaving the capsule with the hope that trends will change and women will want their implants back and the capsule's already there so they can just put them back in?
No, because if you remove a capsule, the women can still get implants. You don't have to have a capsule there to put implants.
Okay. No, but I just wonder if it was easier.
But I have
like
a theory.
It's
not easier.
Do tell.
Same surgery.
Right. Go ahead.
So if they want implants back in, great, let them put them back in. But nobody, that's the funny thing about the breast implant and removing them. These women's breasts, technically by society standards, look worse than they did with breast implants, but nobody's putting their implants back in because they feel so good. Why would you put that back in your body and go through that again? I think I know one woman in 7 years that's put them back in.
Mm-hmm.
And she just, you know,
but it has to be exterior
Playboy
pressure
and all that. And so she has some body.
Like
body dysmorphia issues or whatever they may be. So the interesting thing is I have a theory too, is if you're removing that capsule, most women want the capsule tested. And remember what I said earlier in the show,
right.
The FDA announced that cancer grows in those capsules.
Right.
Do you know why those people don't want the capsules removed? Because they don't want us finding more cancer.
Right. So they'll sacrifice lives for their
grows
profits.
In that capsule.
Yeah, it's lives over profits again. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they love to pitch that the cancers are rare. They're saying, oh, there's just so few cases, the cancer is rare.
Hmm.
The cancer is rare because they're not testing for it. They're not even removing capsules to look for the cancer. So out of sight, out of mind. If they don't look for the cancer, they're not going to find the cancer. That's why they sent out that presidential memo saying, don't remove the capsule. Because if you remove the capsule, the women want the capsule tested to make sure they don't have cancer. And if you're testing capsule, you're going to find cancer, my friend. And they don't want
presidential?
That. Breast implants look bad.
Presidential memo?
Yeah, it was a joint presidential memo sent from the president of the Aesthetic Society and the president of their research foundation. Yeah.
Huh. So they're all in on it.
So.
Yeah. Okay, let's, a couple more things I want to talk about. We've got about 10 minutes. Yeah. Oh, well, usually. Yeah, well, look at Dr. Fascist. I mean, it goes all the way up to him and then to the other folks. Yeah, and like I say, we had Dr. Birx, who apparently was with the National Security Agency, part of the State Department. She wasn't even part of the Health Department, which is a whole other story in itself with COVID. Let's talk about men for a minute. So a lot of this is peer pressure. A lot of this is psychology. So if a woman has a supportive guy, boyfriend, husband, that's got to make a huge difference too, right?
Absolutely. And I'll be honest with you, men nowadays, I feel like are more understanding and supportive and are willing to like lift their women up and protect their women. I mean, at least the people that I hang out with. So,
well, yeah. You're not going to hang with a bunch of Neanderthal deadbeats that are just, yeah, they want a trophy wife with a certain with a certain size to make them look good to their friends. I mean, that's the opposite coin, opposite of this coin here.
Yeah. And there are a few of those. I mean, I don't really come across them. Most of the women that I help, I mean, their husbands are very supportive. And at the end of the day, they just want their wife back. They want their mother back for their kids. I mean, I was a shell of a human being with those breast implants in. You know, so what good are having breast implants or having a wife with a beautiful breast if she's laying on the couch or in bed all day? She can't help raise your kids. She can't be a wife to you. I mean, at the end of the day, when you really think about what breast implants are and what they're doing to women, these guys just want their wives. If they truly love their wives, they want their wife back. They want the mother of their kids back. So it is very lovely to see these supportive men. And we've actually had a group of them talk publicly about it. There's a guy whose video went viral when he was talking about his wife's explant surgery. She was under anesthesia, having her implants removed, and he was literally in tears. And this thing went viral and had like millions of views just because, you know, he gave such a heartwarming testimony about why he supported his wife in her decision to do this. So, and then we had at the Breast Implant Health Summit that I was talking about last year, we had three men that were husbands of our harmed patients, and they spoke about their journey as the caregiver. And it's such an interesting viewpoint to flip it to the men's perspective because, you know, men are protectors by nature, right? They're the big, strong men, and they want to fix things and do all the things.
We're the Papa Bears.
But when you're watching,
yeah,
and when you're watching the woman you love slowly dying, the helplessness, the feeling of just hopelessness and helplessness is devastating to these men. And these men would literally like cry, telling their story, and they don't know what to do. Just tell me what to do, and I can fix it. And there's nothing they can do.
Yeah.
So it is so interesting to see the men's viewpoint and how supportive they are because they really just want their wife back. They want their wife to be healthy. They want to go do the fun things that they've always enjoyed doing as a couple together. And when there's one simple thing standing in the way, get it out. Get it out of the way. And then we can have our lives back. So
yeah, let's talk about love lives for a second because I know the problem is, you know, women will say, well, my husband won't find me attractive, my boyfriend won't find me attractive, and if you're an attractive person, you're an attractive person with or without breasts. I mean, you are. And just for folks, just to let folks know, Robin's an absolute knockout. I mean, she could be a supermodel. So you know, so as far as it's true, I know we're friends, you know, but it has nothing. But as far as other stats or studies on women's love lives, you know, before surgery, with breast implants, without breast implants, it's still the person. It's not the thing, you know, or the two things. You know, are there studies on that? Because I know people are worried about that. You know, or they're just talking about the attractiveness.
There was a study.
Uh huh.
There's a study called, it's PROMS, it's post-reconstructive outcomes after mastectomy or something like that. Don't quote me on the exact term, but the PROMS data basically follows women who have had mastectomy with or without reconstruction. And it was interesting. There was an article posted, I think it was in breastcancer.org on their website, and it was saying that like 80% of women who either went flat from the start, like just had a mastectomy and chose to be done, no more surgeries. Because that's the other thing they don't tell you is it's not just a one and done. Like you're in it for at least 10 surgeries sometimes. I know people that have 27 surgeries on their chest, 27 times under anesthesia, just for boobs.
As opposed to one time and, for cancer removal.
Yep, one time, one and done. So they don't tell you that. And obviously they don't make any money after the one and done. You know, if you just choose to have a mastectomy and be done and not have any, you don't have any more surgeries, the surgeon doesn't make any more money. So there was, you know, studies done showing that these women who were flat, you know, 80% of them are satisfied with their outcome. Their lives have changed for the better. And, you know, I think from a cancer standpoint, most breast cancer women are just so happy to have that cancer out of their body. You know, we don't have the luxury of, oh, I want to look like a supermodel. But then we have women like Christine Handy, who is a supermodel, and she has no breasts because she had a double mastectomy, and she's flat. So the possibilities are endless. Don't tell a woman she can't be a supermodel because she doesn't have breasts, because they're out there. They're walking in New York Fashion Week. They're in Miami Swimsuit Issue. She was in Miami Swim Week a couple months ago, and they're being celebrated for their courage, their bravery, and just putting themselves out there and empowering other women to make the same healthy choices. That's the key word, is healthy. So I think the more people that look at the reality of this and take away the false narrative that the surgeons are pushing because they want more surgeries because it's more money for them, the truth is women are happy. They're happy, they're healthy, and they're living their best lives.
And that's gonna improve your love life right there, because your attitude's better. You know, if you feel good, then your partner's going to feel good, everybody's going to feel good, and this is a good thing. You know, weird things pop into my head, right? So I was thinking of the LGBT community. We'll get to transgender. We talked about that last time. Lesbian couples. I'm just curious. Is this a thing for gay women to have or not to have? Has that ever been looked at?
To have implants, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. Or is that not a big...
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Well, most of the research I do with the trans community is I want to know who's getting sick, and there's no discrimination here. Breast implants make everybody sick, whether it's a breast cancer survivor, a woman just went in for a breast augmentation, or trans women that are getting breast implants, you know, in their transition period. It doesn't matter who you are. You put these implants in, and they're making everybody sick. They're causing cancer on everybody. It's not just a certain subset of women. So that is problematic. So whether it's the trans community, the breast cancer community, or just the regular population, it doesn't discriminate. And that's problematic as well. So it's just awareness. We need to get the awareness out there, and we need to get patients protected. We need to get patients informed. We need to pass these laws, and we need to get the information into patients' hands. So now, am I against women getting breast implants? Look, I think we talked about this last time. Cigarettes are still on the market, you know, and things have changed in the decades that they've been on the market. You know, in the 40s and 50s, we had doctors promoting, I smoke Camels because they're the best. We don't have that anymore. We have a black box warning on cigarettes, and they're still on the market. Anybody who wants to, you know, over the age of, I don't even know what the age is for cigarettes, but anybody who wants to go buy cigarettes and smoke cigarettes.
Right.
Is it 18? So, and we all know that cigarettes can cause lung cancer. Now, does every single smoker get lung cancer? No, not necessarily. But I don't think there's anybody that says cigarettes are healthy for you.
Exactly. Yeah,
I don't think I could find a single doctor or medical professional to say cigarettes are healthy. Breast implants are not healthy either for anybody in any population.
Well, I'm curious about the trans. We actually have a trans reporter. That's why I'm curious. You know me. I don't like to ask personal questions of folks that are on the show. That's why I speak in very general terms all the time. But I'm just curious how the trans community is going to react, you know, when men, you know, transitioning or having breast implants. you know, it's going to be a very interesting thing. I'm curious, you know, or women who want to transition to men and then want to go back, you know, to women and they want implants because of, you know, to get back what they had before. It's a complex issue. There's a lot going on.
It really is. And we had, what was her name? I think her name was Olivia. I'll have to look up her social media, but we had Olivia, who was a trans woman who got really, really sick from her breast implants. And she found our community, you know, our harmed patient community, and chose to have her breast implants removed. And she documented her whole journey. I mean, literally countdown to surgery day, all the way up to surgery day, and then her post-surgery. And she's feeling so much better. And so I think, like I said, it doesn't discriminate. I think no matter who it is, people get angry when these things, when they were not told that this can happen, then they get sick and they go through all these unnecessary surgeries. Maybe she would have made a different decision, you know? Yeah. And a lot of people in the transition process will take the hormones, you know, the female hormones, and they do develop breast tissue. So, you know, when she explanted, she still had breasts. So it's not like even she looked like me where I'm literally completely flat because if, as a mastectomy patient, they remove all the breast tissue.
Right.
So it was so interesting to hear her talk about, but again, it doesn't discriminate. She was saying, I feel so much better. I feel healthy. I'm not feeling like I'm dying every day. I can breathe again. I can exercise again. And then you kind of get to a point where it's such a roller coaster of emotions because you're happy that you feel better. You're happy that you have your health back. You're happy you have life back. But you're angry that this happened to you. And I think that's where the awareness comes in. She was online on social media just constantly telling about her journey to share, to protect other people. And that's the beauty of our community is really just coming together, sharing our stories so that other people are aware and don't fall into the same traps that we fell into. Don't listen to the same BS their doctors are feeding them, that this is what it's going to take to make you feel like a complete trans woman. No, it's not, because if you're on your couch and you're on disability because you can't work anymore because you're so sick, you don't feel like a worthy human being. You literally feel like a zombie. You feel like death, and the doctors aren't telling you that. So kudos to everybody who's willing to share their vulnerable story, because it's not easy to talk about our personal private parts, right? I mean, these are personal.
We do Monday.
Parts of our body that
we have a sex report.
You know,
we get very personal. It's, you had to listen to Dorothy on Mondays. It's pretty wild. In fact, I was hoping she'd call in today too, but she's busy.
Yeah.
As
have
all
call in next
busy.
Time because it really is
well,
important
to
understand that you know, the doctors that are pitching this narrative, they have a conflict of interest. They are making money off these surgeries. And you know, when women know the truth and then they find each other on social media or in support groups and they see these women living their best healthy lives, they're kind of like, wait a second. I have my one doctor who's making tens of thousands of dollars of money off of me for surgery. And I have 100,000 women in this group living their beautiful lives, celebrating their healthy lives.
Right.
Who are you going to listen to? You know, who are you going to listen to? The doctor who's taking $150,000 a year from the pharmaceutical company, from the breast implant manufacturer? Or are you going to listen to the people who are like, I've lived this. I've experienced it. I'm here to tell you, don't make the same mistakes I made. It's powerful. It's so powerful. So I appreciate everyone that's out there sharing their story.
I do too. And this is why this is so powerful, the whole internet and the whole social media, which is something that we never anticipated, was that they would clamp down on information. They would clamp down on social media, that the age of information actually has become the age of disinformation as well. And the people that are putting out the most disinformation are the ones that are accusing everybody else of doing it. Now, we're just putting out truth. We don't mind our stories being challenged. We don't mind. I don't mind anything that I say here on the show being challenged. I frequently admit, hey, you know, I was wrong. You know, it happens. Not a problem. Pinky caught me on a few things over the last week. I don't know if Pinky, I think he's still listening, at least I hope so. Pinky, I got time for you Thursday where I want to do ancient history. I definitely want to talk about that. But just to let you know, today is the 7th anniversary of my open heart surgery. And so this is kind of a special day.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, I thought it was ironic that you were on the show at that particular time. Yeah, so this is part of the reason that I am so involved in health issues is that I was always skeptical of doctors. But I went for, when I was a tour guide in San Francisco, you have to have a commercial driver's license, which means you have to have a health check every 2 years. And there was a really good doctor that was doing health checks. And he says, you got a bit of a heart murmur. This was, you know, 7.5 some odd years ago. I said, well, yeah, I've always had one. The doctor told me that since I was 18. He says, well, it just seems a little bit louder than I like. He says, why don't you go get it checked out? Go to your regular doctor. So I went to my regular doctor who never noticed it. And he says, well, you know, okay, fine. Well, just, you know, it seems okay, but, you know, just to cover my ass. He didn't say that, right? He says, just in case, let's do a EEG, EKG, whatever it was. They hooked me up to a machine. Well, the nurse is like, are you okay after the test? Well, what do you mean? I said, I feel fine. He said, well, did you have any trouble walking up the stairs or do you need a chair back to your car? No, what the hell are you talking about? Well, apparently, you know, I'm like, well, I feel fine. I do tours. You know, I work 14-hour days. I run up and down three flights of stairs at Fort Point, which is the base of the Golden Gate Bridge. And these are big stairs from an 1800s fort, you know, designed for like 18-year-old wow. soldiers. I said, no, in fact, I beat most of my people to the top. You know, I'm doing great. You know, what are you talking about? Well, apparently only half my blood was going forward. The other half was going backwards. I had a 50% regurgitation rate.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, but I felt fine.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. And this is why the doctors were like, they couldn't believe it when they got the results of the test. You know, it was like an ultrasound EKG. They measured everything, stress test a little bit. They said, we can't believe you're just walking around like this. I said, what do you mean? I've been doing it my whole life. I'm not a great athlete, obviously, but, you know, I work full-time job. I'm responsible for people. You know, I take, you know, 40 people into the water in a duck, and I'm out there in San Francisco Bay, just me and, well, actually we had a boat captain because I didn't have a captain's license, but, you know, I was living a crazy normal life. I'm doing 15-mile bike rides, you know. Anyway, so I said, what do you want to do? So, they said, mitral valve. Well, we got to fix your mitral valve. It's not closing properly. I thought, really? So what if I don't do it? And then I actually went to a surgeon.
Yeah.
And to Dr. Khan. So Dr. Khan, the Sikh with the turban, right? The whole bit. So Dr. Khan looks at me and he says, I said, give it to me straight. These people want me to get surgery. And he was the surgeon that would do it. He says to me, well, you've got if we don't do the surgery, if we don't fix your mitral valves, you're going to get myocarditis, which we all know what that is now from the COVID shot, right?
Oh, everyone knows what that is.
Everybody, I didn't know what it was. That's the first time I heard of it, right? And so I said, well, what does that mean? He says, well, you have a 1 in 5 chance of dying in the next 5 years. I said, that's not very good, is it? He says, no, it's not. That was 2 years ago, okay? So I marked the 50th anniversary. So the story gets better. Do you have a few more minutes, like 2 or 3 minutes at least?
Cause yeah.
I think you're going to find this very
interesting.
No, I
love medical stories. I'm
excited. Yeah, okay. Here's mine, right? And this is a good day to tell it because it is the 7th anniversary. And so knock on some plywood here. Let's keep going. So I think, okay, fine. That's interesting, you know. And the funny part was he looked at me. He said, where's your family member? Now, I have one of the world's most dysfunctional families. I didn't want those people anywhere near me. That's part of the reason I moved to California from Massachusetts, to be far enough away from anybody, you know, family, right? Because I would have died on the operating table. You know, I probably shouldn't say that, but that's how I felt, right? So he's like, you don't have a family member. I said, no, I don't. He said, well, you have to have one. I said, my family? No, I'll make this decision myself, thank you. He says, you? And he says, you've got a notebook, too. I said, yeah, I do. He says, what do you got? I said, I got questions. He said, you wrote down questions? I said, yeah, I did. So anyway, so he was flabbergasted that I was as direct and blunt as I was. That's what he told me straight out. He said, look, you got a 1 in 5 chance of dying. So, okay, well, I'll take that advisement and get a couple more opinions. I ended up getting 5 more opinions, 4 more opinions. So I had the surgeon's opinion. I had my cardiologist. That was 2. I had a couple more doctors. And then had the results sent to the chief of cardiology at Stanford Medical because I was on the West Coast, right, in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I talked to him. The guy's like, yeah, this is they're all right. Yeah, you need the surgery, like now. Okay. So after 5 opinions, you know, and I was fully informed. I mean, I was really – I did research. I did online research. I did the whole bit. I knew every part of the mitral valve. I knew the heart chambers. I knew the whole thing, right, because that's me. That's when I consented.
You're
to
like,
okay,
I
fine.
I performed the surgery myself.
Pretty much at that point, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Except I was clinically dead for 4 hours, you know, because they put you on a heart-lung machine. So I know all about ventilators.
Right.
So when they said, so mm-hmm. he's like, you're dead for 4 hours, right, as they do the surgery. So your heart has an artificial pump, the heart-lung machine. So you're on life support while they do the surgery. Now, I wasn't worried about that. I was worried about, you know, the jump start to get me back again. So I remember going out, and the last thing I said to the doctors, and the nurses there, I said, look, I'm going to be a world-famous talk show host one day. I've got an idea that no one's ever done. I said, please do a good job. They said, don't worry about this, Greg. We do this every day. I said, yeah, but I don't. She's like, yeah, you're right, you don't. Okay, fine. And the next thing I remember is waking up, you know, semi-conscious with these tubes down my throat. All right. This is the worst feeling in the world. Well, one of them. I had several worst feelings in the world during this whole process. Anyway, so I'm barely awake. I'm waking up, and I have the worst gag reflex on the planet. So I'm already gagging with these tubes down.
Oh,
my
goodness.
Throat, right? Oh, yeah. And I warned him ahead of time. I told the nurses, I said, look, you've got to pass on to the doctors. You have to tell the folks in ICU, intensive care unit. I said, you've got to tell them I have the world's worst gag reflex. You have to get the tubes out of my throat as soon as I start waking up. Yes, Greg, we'll take care of it. Yeah, I've heard that. No, I said, no, you don't understand. Trust me when I say this, all right?
I will throw up all over every single one of you.
Oh, yeah, no, I actually grabbed the tubes. I can't even talk yet. I'm groggy. My vision is completely blurred. I'm not awake, and I'm already grabbing the tubes, right? And like, no, Greg, you can't do that. You're not breathing. I'm like, because I couldn't talk. So I went, and I couldn't grab it. They restrained my hand. So I was pointing at the tubes, and I was pointing out. So I point the tubes, then I point out. And this is how I communicated with them, right? Hand signals, right? So they yanked the tubes out, and I felt like my whole lung came out with them. Oh, God, that hurts. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Now the recovery story is pretty cool because I was probably the most active heart patient they'd had. I was walking that day. Within a couple of hours, I was walking. All right? Not far.
Nice.
10 feet. Okay, dragging my air conditioner chest cleaning device with me, right? But the next day I walked out to the nurse's station. I said, you folks are part of my recovery. And they're like, what? What are you talking about? I said, yeah, I'm going to flirt with you the whole time I'm recovering. They're like, okay. So I had the nurse flirt recovery plan. And I did. They were gorgeous. Anyway, so that was what I did. So that was my thing. I would go from nurse station to nurse station. That's how I started walking around the ward. And I'm looking in the doors of all these people that are recovering. And they're all like, oh, my life is miserable. I feel terrible. I said, why don't you get them walk around, you stupid idiot? That's what I'm saying to people. Like, who are you? I said, I'm the guy that had the surgery after you. And I'm walking, right?
Right.
So it's just, I was terrible, right? Because this is how I recover. Sarcasm. Sarcasm drives my life. So the nurses were wonderful. Some weren't. There was one that couldn't draw blood to save her life. I fired her. I said, look, you're never coming back to draw my blood, okay? I said, I want the nurse before you because she was really good. She was 2 tourniquets, by the way. That's the secret, 2 tourniquets. Anyway, So here's the story. It gets interesting. So my recovery, everything went fine. Surgery was fine. I recovered fine. I was out of the hospital, normal time, maybe a little faster. Came home, and I started walking. And I was able to walk up to a mile within a couple of weeks. Well, by the third week, all of a sudden something happened. Now I can only do half a mile. I'm like, what's going on here? Then another day later, I started feeling really tired. And then I was the next day I only did a block. Like, this is wrong. This is really wrong. I'm out of breath. I don't know what's happening, but I can't breathe. So I went to my doctor's and he said, well, I don't know what's going on. You better get to the emergency room. I said, yeah, like, no, you know what, doc? Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's go. Send me to the emergency room. And I couldn't drive, so I had a friend drop me off. But what they found when they x-rayed my chest was my entire right lung had collapsed and my left lung was halfway gone. And what happened was fluid. And what I think it was the blood thinners. So they gave me blood thinners after the surgery and said, you have to take these. I'm like, why? To prevent a stroke. Okay, that made sense, right? But then afterwards, I found out when I started really asking questions, I said, tell me about these blood thinners. I said, what do they do? Well, they thin blood. I said, I've never had fluid on my chest in my life. I didn't have it after surgery. I had it after blood thinners. That's the main thing you gave me. I said, and what causes a stroke after heart surgery? Well, inactivity. I said, inactivity? Jesus, that's the most active person you've ever had. And you gave me blood thinners? That's the protocol, right? So it doesn't matter how active you are.
Mm-hmm.
So I was way more active than anybody else. I was never going to get a stroke. Well, it's possible, but not from inactivity. And so they tried to put me. So what happened was they had to wait till the blood thinners were completely out of my system. Isn't that interesting? This is how I knew this was the culprit, right? And so a couple of days, so I'm in the hospital for a couple of days waiting for the blood thinners to, die down, breathing not well, And this is why I was so scared when COVID people were put on ventilators, because I know what these things do. Anyway, so they took me downstairs. And a couple of nice doctors rammed a 6-inch needle into my back, all the way into my chest cavity, and took out a liter and a half of fluid. 1,500 cc's, 1,500 milliliters. And
wow.
Oh my God, that was interesting. And then I said, did you get all the fluid? No. Well, take the rest of it. Well, we can't. Why not? We can only take a liter and a half per day. Well, so how many days do we plan to do this? Oh, we don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Well, at least you got that much out. Okay, so I went back upstairs. The next day I came down again. Now, this time I know how big the needle is. I know what it feels like going into my chest. It's bad enough when you don't know. It's really bad when you do know. So they pop a needle in, and they took out another 1,500 cc's, a liter and a half. And I'm like, is there any more fluid in there? Oh, there's lots more in there. I said, take the rest of it. I said, we can't. I said, yes, you can. I'm ordering you to take the rest of it out. Well, you'll be responsible. I said, of course I'll be responsible. It's my body. I said, why would I want all this fluid in my chest? Why would I want to come back here a third day, have you stick an enormous needle into me when you can take it out now? Well, we have to discuss this. It's not our protocol. I said, damn your damn protocols. I said, get this stuff out of my chest. I want to start breathing again, right? And so they did. They took out another liter and a half. So now we're talking 4.5 liters of fluid. Okay. So just imagine two liter bottles plus another liter, plus another half a liter. That's like my entire chest cavity, okay, was filling up with
fluid.
Wow. Yeah. Now, once they took it out, one of the most excruciating pains on the face of the earth is having lungs reinflate. Okay. This hurts. So when you talk about your surgery, I know exactly what you're, well, not exactly, because obviously I haven't had the same surgery, but I know what major surgery is like.
It's painful. Yeah.
It's really painful.
Surgery,
well,
yep.
Lungs inflating because every lung air sac in your lung has to reinflate. And it's a very painful. Yeah. So it's the only time I took an entire hydrocodone painkiller, right? And I needed it. And I believe in painkillers for necessary. But I only took enough so that I'd have just a little bit of pain left over. I always want to have some pain so I know which way not to move.
Right.
So I didn't do any damage.
I always feel that way too. I'm like, I want to, like, it's such a double-edged sword. It's like you don't want to be in pain, but you want to be able to feel like I shouldn't move that way. I shouldn't bend that way, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. Everything
but they want zero pain.
Right. I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do believe
so they want zero
pain. Place for certain medicines, but everything's overprescribed, overused. Yeah, just it's crazy.
Yeah, painkillers. We should talk about that.
I'm glad you're here. Seven years later. Congratulations.
7 years later. But here's
that.
The thing. I'm
awesome.
Bike riding. I just did an 18-mile bike ride, recently. You know, I've extended my bike. I'm at the gym twice a week. I now bike to the gym to get more exercise. You know, I'm losing weight. I gained a ton of weight after the surgery. But it kept it on. A lot of it was stress of moving here. Here's the weird part. I moved to Florida from California 4 months after open heart surgery.
Wow.
You want to talk about dumb? That was really dumb. Best thing I ever did. And the stupidest.
It's hard.
At the same time. But I never took another blood thinner, and I'm never going to.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, every time I gave up one of the medicines they gave me, I felt better.
Yeah.
So now it's like, natural foods, no wheat, no, very little carb. No seed oils. It's avocado mayonnaise, for me. And it's just every day I gain more, more things. So I'm there with you with health challenges, And so I've had a heart repaired. My heart's doing great. Knock on wood again, I need to do many more years to get Action Radio where it needs to be. So I hope to meet you because you're special. You're an amazing person. I love what you're doing. I love the work you're doing.
Thank you.
And I want to help in any. Oh, you're welcome. I want to help in any way I can. So that's my thing.
Yeah.
Any comments on my story?
Well, hopefully I
I'm
can make
curious.
It out January 7th. And I think that's awesome. I'm happy you're here. And I think sometimes turning just our mess into our message and how we can help others, that's what it's all about, right?
I'm going to steal that. Our mess into our message. That's brilliant. I like that.
Yeah.
You're so good. All right, I'm going to write that down. So let's get all your plugs. Let's get all your information, group information, how people find you, websites, Facebook pages, everything.
So I'm super easy. All of my social media on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn is just Robyn Tout, RobynTowt. And our website is gpacunited.org. And it's GPAC, Global Patient Advocacy Coalition. And we have a ton of resources on our page. Our website's constantly under construction so that we're adding more just to help people in any way we can. Please feel free to reach out to me via PM if you have any questions about medical device safety, medical device adverse events, FDA corruption. I'm happy to talk about it all.
absolutely.
Kind of all over.
So you
got
to come back. You need to come back like every couple of months just to give us an update and just because you're fascinating to talk to. And I love our conversations. In fact, you can bring back any of the other team members if they want to come back too. But you do such a great job of this that this works out really well. And I'm with you, just because I've had surgery that went well and then a chemical, a drug that almost killed me. So I'm right there with you.
Yeah. Yep.
That's my story.
Well, thanks for having me on, Greg.
Well, you're very welcome, and we'll talk soon, I'm sure. I'll see if I can connect you with some of those other folks. And, we happy warriors of the Do Something Club. I'm going to start a Facebook group, the Do Something Club. I'll let you know. I'll send you an invite.
Yeah, let me. Okay, sounds good.
All right.
Have a great day.
I'll talk to you later.
We'll talk
Thank
soon.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Bye now. Wow, that's another incredible discussion. So I'll send Robyn the podcast. Podcasts are available generally about 15 minutes or so after the show. It takes me longer to get the show notes done just because there's so much going on with everything else that happens around here. So we had to start with Brianna, Then Josie Pianchi was a huge help with his call. And then I got to talk to Robin the last hour, and I'm pretty happy with that. And so I'll be back tomorrow. So tomorrow, Wednesday, it's reporters all the way through. So we have Bill Fecky starts us off with the Fecky Report, Wendy Arthur with the Oh My God Report, Bonnie Nesbitt with the B Word, and then Bianca Von Krieg with the Progressive Report. And that's our Wednesday. And I will talk to you all tomorrow, 7 a.m. Central Time, when we will do it all again. Here is your Action Radio contact and website information. The call-in line is 215-383-3832. Our show site is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Same link, live and a podcast. Please share all our shows. We have live chat at the bottom of the broadcast page available worldwide. Sign in to your free account and type away. We have an internet Skype line where you can call the show worldwide also. Please see the broadcast page for our Skype name. Call in during the show to get approved. Our bill writing site is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. This is where anyone can write a bill and start the process of it becoming law. My paid and free subscription column is at gregpenglis.substack.com. Please consider a paid subscription of $5 per month or greater. For contributions to Action Radio, please go to givesendgo.com/actionradio. We have over 20 Action Radio Facebook groups. Use the Facebook search window by putting in Action Radio to find our groups. My public email is greg@writeyourlaws.com. Please contact me about advertising on Action Radio and helping our mission of freedom. Thank you for listening. Do you know someone who died in a hospital? Did you know that medical errors are the leading cause of death in hospitals? What if I told you you could prevent or protect yourself from hospital death? The founders of Hospital Hostage Hotline and ProtocolKills.com are offering a free upcoming webinar titled, How to Save Your Life When Hospitalized. Here you will learn how to have your choices legally honored, how to prevent unwanted protocols and treatments, how to understand hospital structure, how to stop harassment and bullying. Space is limited, so sign up today at protocolkills.com/webinar. And if you're thinking, I'll just never go to the hospital, see where that gets you when you've suffered a car wreck, an asthma attack, or a ruptured appendix. It's not just about COVID anymore. So do yourself and your family a favor by knowing how to save your ass by signing up for this free webinar at protocolkills.com/webinar. Don't miss out. Do it now, as if your life depends on it, because it does. Reserve your seat to the webinar at protocolkills.com/webinar. Catch it October 26th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, or October 28th, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engine. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITHcare.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.